facility. The what is very critical is that thanks to Honorable Mabika for arriving just on time. It's always a pleasure that this is one of those committees that never fails from the side of the members who can be able to do his work. And I think the minister in her policy, in a statement of policy and commitment, amongst other things that he said is that safety and security on the roads is a very critical thing, but our roads are very strategic roads here in the Republic that we're dealing with economic issues, and therefore it becomes a very pertinent thing that as we're dealing with the Department of Transport, we should take all those regulatory factors into consideration as we do our work. I am not going to be elaborating much except to welcome you, DM, and your team from the Department of Transport, but also to raise a concern that in my absence, I'm informed that we couldn't have a meeting on Tuesday as scheduled by Parliamentary Programming Committee because there was a glitch that came from the department. And I think this is a glitch that we always speak to, that we would love to work very close to the department. We would really want to make sure that we work in unison and we work collaboratively and cooperatively. But when now the chips are down to an extent that it's a wasteful expenditure that we experience from those that came, and we couldn't do work because there was no, particularly from the Director General, delegated authority for somebody to be able to lead. The email that I got from the Director General's office was 13 hour 21, which was indicating the directives when the meeting was supposed to have started at 9:30 in the morning, which is an indication that somewhere we're deleting our duties. And I think this will not be something that becomes a feature in the department. But we will be taking this matter up with the chief whip. We have already committed to formally with all the time we have been speaking, but we will also be writing a letter to the minister to indicate our concerns as a committee to say these are the observations that we have been making and now. We can't continue making those observations. We have to speak to them and believe that there must be consequences if people fail to do their duties. Having said that, DM, we are now going to be through you requesting Aptia to present, but I'll give you yourself, honorable member, to introduce your team and let's have a take from them. Thank you very much, dear.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. First, let me inform the honorable members, Chairperson, that we received bad news yesterday evening that one of our MECs, MEC Voshongwe, lost his very young daughter in an accident outside his house in Emelo, hit by a car, and the child passed on. And I think it's important for us to know is for the Department of Transport is part of our MINEC, but also part of the MECs that we work with. And we worked with during Easter weekend for roads in the fight against road accidents on our roads. And it is unfortunate that he loses his young child through an accident. I personally know Comrade Bruce's children, they're very young. and it is really unfortunate that he's lost one of them. It's his last born child, and I think we really want to extend our condolences to Comrade Vusi as a department, but I think the chairperson will definitely want to do that on behalf of the portfolio committee and all of us. But I think it's important that we inform you about this unfortunate eventuality. This goes to the heart of what is actually happening in South Africa with regards to road accidents and fatalities that occur as a result of this, and it's something that all of us are worried about, and it's something that we think we should not politic about. And I'm saying this referring to even the letter, that open letter that was directed to the minister, which we think is an unfortunate open letter in all its forms and everything about it. Whilst it says it's not politicking, but it does politic. And there is nothing insane about everything that we do in the Department of Transport. What we're doing is what is done in the world in dealing with road fatalities. We still talk wherever we go, whether it's UN, it's about education, awareness campaigns that are run by countries, including South Africa. Here it's about engineering, looking at the roads, but it's about enforcement and evaluation. This is not what South Africa is doing, but this is what the world is doing, and of course improving on what we're doing. So we think that it's an unfortunate letter. It should not have been written. It's politicking. It's about people dying. It's about the pain that people have to go through every day as they lose their members of their families and are members of our families through road accidents. Just want to make that comment to person. But maybe to come back to the issue that the chairperson raised regarding the meeting, portfolio committee meeting on Monday, I would also want to reiterate our position as the department and of course the executive that we expect that as according to the PSMA, the accounting officer will attend meetings. We expect that in accordance with the constitution, we will attend meetings. But it's true that it's not possible that we'll attend all those meetings, and therefore we send apologies. Also, the accounting officer, as per the PSMA, will send off apologies to the portfolio committee. We said each delegation must be led by at least no less than 80 DGs. And we thought that it is what is happening, that each delegation is led by a DDG, and we therefore relax when there is a DDG. I just want to mention that for the, I think it was Monday meeting, we thought there was indeed a DDG, and indeed there was, in the person of Advocate Sobekwa, who is an acting DDG for Maritime. I would only want to apologize that maybe the DG therefore did not probably inform the portfolio committee that she is therefore leading the delegation. And in that regard, I would just request the portfolio committee to understand that we have the DDG that has just joined. She's still under orientation, and orientation includes even the work of the portfolio committee. But otherwise, we really believe that we had a delegation that could come to Parliament led by a DDG in the person of acting DDG Advocate Sobekwa for Maritime. Others, they were acting because the DDG concerned would be on leave, like Labisa is on leave, but acting DDG Sobekwa is acting in the act because the post is vacant, and therefore he is acting. Today, Villiers, acting DDG de Villiers, is leading the delegation in terms of officials. I'm here, but of course in terms of officials, when I leave, he definitely is leading because he's acting DDG. This is what we have said, we've re-emphasized it, and we're hoping that it is happening. I just want to mention that indeed on Monday there was an acting DDG in the person of Advocate Sobekwa, could be that the letter was probably not written by the DG to say she is leading that, that she is acting the DG. We've had some DDGs resigning. DDG Hamida just resigned, and therefore that post is vacant in maritime, and that is why we have an acting DDG there. And also acting, I mean, DDG Du Toit resigned, she's just resigned, and therefore we have a vacancy there. And we therefore only have, we have a vacancy in Race, for instance, and that is why De Villiers is acting there. So we do have these vacancies, and we have people appointed to act on a permanent basis until we fill those vacancies. I just want to mention that, apologizing the fact that there probably was not a letter from the DG to say, I'm delegating so-and-so to lead the delegation, but I just wanted to mention the fact that it was indeed a DDG, and others were acting DDGs in the absence of DDGs that are on leave during this time. And I will at that moment, I mean on that note, request the CEO RT to take us through the presentation and apologize for what happened on Monday. We were comfortable as the executive that we have a delegation that is coming to Parliament, and it is what we expect it to be like. We did not anticipate that they were going to be glitches just because probably there was no yet. I just therefore apologize for that. It was an omission. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before the CEO starts, Honorable Ramaphosa.
No, Chair, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister. I think that for the meeting of Tuesday, just so the record is clear, for the record, there was an acting DDG. The issue was that we raised, the DG wasn't there, there was no letter of apology. And when we asked that the letter of apology be sent, so that we clarify in terms of a PFMA, who's then taking responsibility, designated official to lead, that letter didn't come. When the letter eventually arrived, it did not say anything about who is taking, who is a DG delegating to take responsibility. The meeting adjourned in the middle of the day. Throughout the morning, we were trying to get this matter, technical matter, sorted out. So it was not sorted out. So I just wanted to clarify that from our side, we actually extended time to get technical matter sorted out. There was no dispute that there were acting DDG that were there. The issue that was a problem for the committee was the that who is then responsible? All of you are here as a DDG. Who has been appointed to lead or to take responsibility? Because this is about the PMA, is specifically Section 37, that when a DG is not there, he will then say, I'm designating X to then lead and to take responsibility. That's the only issue that we had, that we're trying to find solution with those who were there. But unfortunately, that letter came after the meeting adjourned. It was about after 1:15. So I just wanted for the record to say that there was a clarity problem. There was a technical issue that was supposed to be sorted out, even by those DDG that were there, to say, among you as you here, who are you being delegated to take this responsibility? So that I just wanted to clarify that, so that at least there is absolute clarity in terms of what actually happened. We didn't say there was no DDG there. The issue was simply the rules that were supposed to follow.
Thank you very much, Honorable Siband.
Just a photo. Deputy Minister, I'd like to appeal very strongly to the department, because here in Parliament, in terms of the procedures, was scared that the procedure might be against us. because some of the processes we must go through, we must take through those processes before it is finalized that we are going to debate on the 5th of May. And my appeal is that this thing must never happen again, because we gave time. We sent messages throughout to try and sensitize them that please, may please send at least a letter to us, so that we can try and convince other people, and then we continue with our responsibility. Lastly, with recall well, a similar thing happened in one of the hotels, whereby there was not a single person who wanted to take a responsibility from the department side about the authorities, about the powers, that who's delegating who. This thing must never happen again. It must never happen again. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, TN.
No, thank you, Chair. I hear the members are talking, and again we're apologizing for that. I also want to reiterate the fact that we do have a DG who is still undergoing orientation, and part of his orientation is the work of the portfolio committee. I just really want to reiterate that, and probably request for indulgence from the committee that sometimes there might be some omissions, but not with the aim of undermining, but with the fact that he's still being, oriented. I just want to say that. And apologize for that. We understand the fact that indeed the accounting officer is the DG, and if he's not able to come, he must delegate somebody to lead so that he takes the accountability. And of course, the CEOs as well, from entities, they were indeed here to account for what is happening in the state-owned entities. Thank you, Chair. I will think that the CEO of RTA can then lead the presentation. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable members, colleagues. Indeed, it is a pleasure for us as the Road Traffic Infringement Agency appear before this esteemed committee to account for what we do. Allow me, Honourable Chairperson, to firstly start with the apology of our Chairperson, who is unable to be with us. Unfortunately, there is a bereavement in the family. One of the most serious tragic accidents that happened on the road during the Easter weekend involved a niece, and in that accident, four people were killed instantly. The four-year-old niece also died. As the car was rolling, she was spewed out of it, and the car ended up landing on her and obliterated the young baby's body. The six-year-old child is also still in intensive care unit. The mother experienced broken bones and a hip. The husband had a broken arm and leg. And the funeral of the baby is unfortunately in Harrismith this very day, Chairperson. So in as much as our Chairperson wanted to have been here, she is unfortunately not able to join us. But she also asked me to express her gratitude for the support that she has received from our minister, our deputy minister, the board of the RTIA, the Road Accident Fund, as well as the Road Traffic Management Corporation. In that state, she is represented by Mr. Ben Martinise, who is the board member as well as the chairperson of our technical committee. And I'm also here with the executive manager of finance. Unfortunately, our CFO is unable to join us. She's in an advanced stage of expectancy, so her travel is kind of limited. But we do welcome this opportunity and kindly request that the apologies be noted. Thank you, Chairperson. We are also appreciative of the support that we've been getting from this committee, and we have been following with great interest and a lot of excitement the comments and representations that have been made, in particular by the Chairperson, in support of the activities that we're undertaking, especially the penal measures that we need to be able to implement pursuant to the objectives that we have set of effecting a fundamental change in the road traffic management sphere. Our strategic plan, what we will be able to go through is our mandate, mission, stakeholder, universe, performance environment, and with that background, we'll be able to see the reason why we are able to formulate our strategic goals over the period and what are the things that we expect to be able to achieve, the commitments that we've made, as well as the budget, and touch on some of the remaining challenges, the risks associated therefore, and the proposed solutions that we are dealing with on an ongoing basis. The mandate that we have, and this is something that is very important, I'm excited also, the Chairperson, given the complicated nature of our environment, we have written correspondence to the committee requesting that if we can take advantage of an opportunity to have a workshop so that we go directly into the intricacies in respect of our mandate and in respect of the ARTO environment, we will be able to get much the more proactive comments and assistance that will be coming from the committee, and we are excitedly looking forward to that opportunity to be able to have that workshop. The mandate is currently encapsulated in our Act to encourage compliance with all road traffic laws. We're sitting at the end of the process, and for all the activities that we're undertaking, we want to ensure that all the road traffic laws are fully complied with so that we can effect the change. Similarly related thereto is the penal measures that are provided in terms of the payment of penalties to establish an effective adjudication procedure. And this is one of the most important that we are tasked with, to ensure that how we adjudicate over any infringement will be as effective as possible, and something that establishes a proactive mechanism so that you have that interaction between the infringer as well as ourselves as the adjudicators, alleviating thereof the burden of the courts on the trying of offenders, penalizing guilty offenders through the demerit points, and rewarding that good behavior through those reductions where we would have cases that those demerit points would have been established. And the reason for the establishment of the agency is for us to be able to support all law enforcement, particularly those that are sitting at the core phase of it, our sister agency, the RTMC, the CBRCA, and all the issuing authorities throughout the country, thereby strengthening the cooperation between law enforcement and all the prosecuting authorities. The mission that we have is to encourage compliance in South Africa through targeted road user community education and communication programs. And this is the catalyst that we are anchoring everything else, so that fundamentally, if we are going to be able to change people, we want to inculcate a new habit of understanding their obligations, their roles, their rights, their responsibilities, so that the action that comes from there will be something that naturally enhances the compliance that we want to be able to see on the road. Promoting procedurally fair, lawful, and reasonable administrative adjudication, levying of penalties, demerit points, and the effective administration and management of demerit points. And the demerit points in and of themselves are perhaps the one aspect that sits at the forefront of the understanding that people want to be able to put focus on when you're talking about the implementation of the ARTO. In that respect, it being the one specific mechanism that will enable us to easily identify recalcitrant motorists and those that have been disobeying the law, particularly habitual infringers, so that we can remove them out of the driving fold and protect the general members of the public that we have in our country. Our stakeholder universe is fully consolidated in that we give support to each and every one of our institutions, the strategic partners being all the transport entities, and we have very close relationships with our sister agencies working together as a fully consolidated unit, all government departments, and we have come up now with a specific focus area where we say together we can be able to effect a change. And the first time we want to ensure that we're not only talking about government cooperating with one another, but have proactive mechanisms that can be able to show that together we are in this. If we want to ensure compliance, one of the things that we have also identified, Chairperson, is the majority of businesses or units that have not been paying the traffic infringements, that have not been compliant, are actually our colleagues in other government departments. And to that extent, we want to ensure that we have strategic partnerships and ensure that we engage with them directly so that they can, together with us, lead by example. Law enforcement officers, and in particular, to categorize all the road users that we have. All of us fall within their category, be it whether one owns a vehicle or not. At one point or another, every time one becomes a pedestrian, at the time that you have parked your vehicle, and therefore you want to have particular programs that are related there to for the protection of vulnerable road users that we can identify throughout the whole process. Here's the challenge that we're facing. South Africa's greatest challenge, the significant reduction of the road carnage. And when we're talking about the road carnage, Chairperson, we're not only talking about the number of people whose lives are lost on the roads. Perhaps the one aspect that has got the biggest negative impact are those people that actually get seriously injured. Because as much as it may be unfortunate, if I lose my life on a road crash, it becomes a final event. And people and my family can be able to mourn me for a period of a week or 2 weeks, but there is finality thereof. But when somebody is seriously injured, we are going to continue experiencing the negative fiscal impact on that because we need to be able to make provision. That's why our sister agency, the Road Accident Fund, will always keep on incurring a lot of expenditure in the rehabilitation of all these people. And if that particular road user is a young person, we need to be able to make provision, and they might be able to live up to 65, 70 years. And if it is a youngster, we still have about 40, 50 years that we need to make sure that we take care of our citizens in that regard. If you look at this, it may be a comic kind of representation, but this is perhaps one of the serious challenges that we're having. And throughout all the whole period, we're very excited that our Deputy Minister in particular has been leading in the forefront, encouraging us to ensure that we can have road safety, not as something that we talk about now and then, but it must be a 365-day type of program. Every day that we wake up, we need to be able to identify and say, today this is what the RTRA is doing about encouraging road safety, changing one life at a time, and ensuring that we are able to build road safety ambassadors that themselves can go change the attitude of their family members first, and then those within their own circle and sphere of influence. Also, drinking and driving, but we have also come up with another mechanism, because traditionally we keep talking about our people that are drinking and driving. But Chairperson, we also recognize that, unfortunately, our children, and it is not a matter of only drinking and driving. We need to step up our enforcement and detection mechanisms so that we come up with consolidated programs that will ensure we identify drug driving. And even if an officer stops somebody by the side of the road, he may not look like he's inebriated. He may not be smelling of any alcohol, but that could be the most dangerous road users that we have. And the extent to which we become very proactive with international benchmarking that we've undertaken, come up with measures that we can easily identify these people. Later on, after we've had the Amendment Act being promulgated, we will be able to identify and implement particularly categorized and highly focused rehabilitation programs. In this respect, we have also entered into strategic partnerships, servicing with some of our city, the health and welfare center, because it is their responsibility on anything that has got to do with psychological impact, so that they will be able to assist us to make progress in this respect. The underlying contributory factors, we have recognized it is the rate and number of traffic crashes and fatalities that are directly proportional to the level of lawlessness and driver misbehavior. It is unfortunate that in the 2013 period, the United Nations have rated us very low in terms of effective law enforcement. We have noted that worldwide, the best solution is always one that shows effective, visible law enforcement. Not only that, coupled with intensive, continuous community awareness campaigns that are geared towards empowering our members. The last aspect, it has to be followed and supported by a highly effective judicial traffic management system. In this respect, we already have the basic infrastructure promulgated in terms of the ARTO Act. It is unfortunate that we have been rated out of the countries, among the worst in the world. We rated 2.6 out of 10 compared with the world average of 6, and France showing the highest level at 8.6. We compare ourselves with our sister countries, 5.8 in Swaziland, Zimbabwe 5.0, and Namibia 4.4. However, we're also quite excited that together, having recognized this, these are not things that are supposed to make us feel bad and not do anything about it. We need to be able to take this as a challenge, particularly in respect with our sister agency, the RCMC, that will be reporting. We're excited that they have also started the process of recruiting more than 1,000 law enforcement officers. It may not yet be enough, but at least we are already starting on the process of addressing all this, and therefore we are taking on a proactive nature to ensure that we are able to achieve objectives. Over the strategic plan period, Chairperson, five key things that we want to establish. Number one, to create a culture of compliance to all road traffic laws. We want to be able to change people from only a reactionary kind of compliance. Whenever we travel on the freeway or on the road network, just because one sees some blue lights or traffic officer 100 meters away, that is the only time that people start slowing down and wanting to comply. But immediately after passing, they zoom as if they are on the Formula One grid. And therefore, it's a matter of changing that. We have also noted the unfortunate thing. If we take just one example, Chairperson, every time that you have more than two people driving in a vehicle, if the driver is the only one with a driving license, the other ones that do not have driving licenses, more often than not, they become very comfortable. But if you have two drivers, one not driving, the one that is not driving can easily identify mistakes that are made by the other driver as they keep on traveling. And if my colleague, Mr. Martinez, will say, Jeff, you've just made a mistake there, you didn't do this, the natural reaction is always, Ben, relax. I've been a driver for 25 years, I've never caused an accident. However, that is not the issue, because you're not talking about my history. What is important is the intricacies of what is actually occurring at that particular moment. And we want to be able to change that. And the way that we can change and sustain it is by going down to our road users as young as possible. And therefore, we're coming up with programs that can address the youngsters while they're still at school. You will then have a situation that at the end of the period, what the ministers and the deputy minister want to achieve by having our children, our youth, coming up of matric with a certificate and a driving license on the one hand, is people that are fully empowered about the responsibilities of road safety, not getting a driving license for the mere fact of it. Some of the other things that we've been finding, and I'm sure the Honorable Deputy Minister would, has covered this very well. Some things that are very disheartening that we're finding in terms of the level of corruption that occurs within the driving license testing centers. And they've been leading us very proactively during the past week and paying unannounced visits, and we want to be able to come up with proactive mechanisms where you come sometimes, chairperson, you go to a testing center. They start operating at 7:30 in the morning. By the time that you get there, at 11 o'clock, the examiners already have about 10,000 rand cash in their pockets, all of them. And there have been situations where some have been promoted and flatly refused to take that promotion because there is no money whenever they're going to be able to take higher positions. Now, the Deputy Minister was very furious when she was leading us and said, we do not need to waste any time. We must be able to come up with sting operations, make sure that we can transform this environment. And these are the critical challenges that we are continuously grappling with to be able to effect the fundamental change. Changing the behavior of road users and turning them into road safety ambassadors. And this one, we want to be able to tie it up with the third one, establish a conscious commitment to road safety through annual observation of road safety prayer days. This is one of our flagship programs that we have identified, and we have taken this together with our interfaith movement, our religious leaders, and ensure that we continue to circulate the petition that we will be able to present to our minister so that she goes to cabinet and request cabinet to declare the 1st of October. And we've come with October because October is traditionally transport month. So if we do it at the beginning of the period, whereby we can call South Africans of all faiths that recognizes there is a higher being, and we invoke the spirit of that higher being so that they will be able to bring all of us together as a country, and we continuously pray for road safety. And this is one of the legacies that we can be able to leave for our country to observe road safety prayer days. Establishing an efficient and sustainable road traffic management environment, as well as the establishment of rehabilitation programs. When we had started on the process of engagement in respect of rehabilitation programs, one of the key things that had been proposed in our legislation was, as part of the penal measures, Chairperson, that we need to include the punishment that judicial officers can dictate that somebody, as part of the community service, must be able to go and wash and prepare the corpses of victims of road crashes. If I have done something irresponsible that led to somebody losing their lives, I need to be able to make penance for that. And this is something that was fully supported. There was not even a single submission that was against that. Everybody else had fully supported that. But the kind of rehabilitation programs that we want to also implement are rehabilitation programs that will not only seek to punish, but the intended purpose of those rehabilitation programs is to ensure people understand their responsibilities, come out of the process, and they must be the ones that become ambassadors and go out and say, you are doing something that you don't know what the consequences thereof. And they can be able to show people where they were, what they are at now, and what are the things that will be able to benefit our country. For the current period, 15-16, the objectives that we've committed to are 7, enforcing compliance by penalizing the contravention of traffic offenses, the increase in the payment of penalties, changing the behavior of our road users, the administration and resourcing of the agency in terms of the resources, the personnel and the infrastructure, increasing access to ARPA information. We have also noted one of the challenges that we've had and the criticism that came from the committee as in the form of advice that we need to ensure that the whole country in preparation for the rollout get to know about the RTIA and about the ARPA, because we were limited in our operations focusing only on Gauteng. So we started going out as advised by the committee, to ensure that everybody else gets to be able to understand that. Establishing and strengthening strategic partnerships to enhance road safety, and in this respect we're talking about local and international partnerships, particularly taking into consideration what the DM had indicated in opening address now, that we have a commitment to the United Nations. And it is not only international commitments, but the local commitments of strategic partners so that we are able to achieve our objectives, as well as then finally preparing for the ARTO national rollout. A bit of the details in respect of what that entails in enforcing compliance, the number of representations. Our baseline for the current period, Chairperson, is 125,000 representations. We are now in the process of auditing. We'll be able to confirm that number at the end of the process. But for the 15-16 period, we projected 151,000 and slightly increasing over the next 2 years. The second objective, in terms of the first one, we've then broken it down on a quarterly basis in terms of the projections that we are looking at. The third one is the increase in the amount of unpaid infringement penalties and the fees collected. The baseline that we're talking in the current period is 270 million rand. For the 15-16 period, we are projecting 355 million. For the next period, 450 million, then 572 million over the 17-18 period. Also, the way that the Act currently stands, Chairperson, one of the ways in which we can be able to judge the success of the RTIA is by how quickly we can bankrupt ourselves. Because if we achieve objectives, we should not have too many people committing infringements. And by not too many people committing infringements, the revenue that is generated, therefore, should start dwindling. And therefore, we have started the process of developing and we have finalized our funding model and therefore need to effect any changes that would be supportive of the processes that we're undertaking. We're not looking at this as a revenue generation mechanism. Also, the number of valid courtesy letters that have been served, projection under the baseline being 500,000, but for the 15-16 period, we're projecting 2.3 million. 2.4 million also, the slightly increasing, and thereafter, the third year, it is also going to be able to dwindle down. In terms of the formula that we are looking at, in terms of the impact that we'll be having, because the more that we are becoming impact, the more we will start experiencing a diminishing return on that basis. Similarly, on the enforcement orders, looking at 490,000, 2.2 million, and then starting to go down a little bit. Then on the next level, objective number three, this is further details that we have on the next slide in terms of the quarterly projections. The third indicator is the number of public awareness and education campaigns that we're conducting in support of the United Nations Decade of Action for Road Safety, as well as the National Development Plan. In this respect, our baseline is 22 campaigns that we had committed to in the current period, and we have then gone on to be able to break those down so that you have a particular target and focus area. We're looking at 9 provincial outreach meetings on the ARTO that will be conducted. Similarly, in terms of every province, we want to be able to have one key focus meeting per province. Then looking at the print media awareness programs, and in this respect, both of them are not talking only about the ARTO, but it's about the ARTO as a function that gives effect to the increment of road safety. We also looked at 48 ARTO and road safety community radio messages, 144 ARTO electronic billboard adverts, and these are the ones that we want to be able to make proactive so that they keep on changing and speak to the particular intricacies according to a particular province, a particular region, or a locality. On the next slide, on rehabilitation programs that have been established, the baseline is not applicable at the moment because we haven't got any established rehabilitation programs. Looking at 15-16, accrediting and establishing 5 pilot traffic rehabilitation schools, and we will then be able to roll them out in the following financial year. and the accreditation and piloting the traffic rehabilitation schools. We're looking at a number of different models. In this particular respect, Chairperson, we are putting much greater emphasis on community development workers, cooperatives, so that we can be able to take our programs as localized as possible, because the people that are living with communities on the ground would know what are the critical challenges, and they are the ones that can be able to use it to upstream and make a positive impact. Interfaith Movement Prayer Day campaigns. The baseline is one prayer day meeting that was held in Gauteng on the 3rd of December, and we're looking at the 9 provincial road safety prayer day meetings. The second part of it is, if you go back, yes, the second part of it is the signature petition for declaration of a national prayer day for road safety. In this respect, the target that we are committed to is to acquire 1 million signatures so that when we give the report to the minister, it will be fully supported. We also have printed the required books, and we have also in this respect, Chairperson, not only doing it as the RTIA ourselves as well as the sister agencies, but we have appointed 141 unemployed youth that we called, and we said we will be able to start introducing them to our own environment. And they are the ones that are becoming our soldiers. They go out into the communities from the high school, from the churches and community organizations, and they go into their communities and they're taking the signature books, and people are declaring their allegiance there to signing their details, and we want to be able to have 1 million signatures. We have the electronic petition also that is uploaded on the RTRA website, and together we'll be consolidating the manual ones in the form of those books as well as the electronic ones that we'll be able to extract from our website. The next performance indicator is the empowerment of vulnerable road user groups for road safety. In this particular respect also, to be able to effect a fundamental change and make positive impact, we're looking at the adoption of 8 schools or communities for sustainable road safety projects and their empowerment. If we go into their own localities, therefore, you can make a much better difference by empowering these people. And ultimately, we are looking at our unemployed youth that we will be appointing as ambassadors on a regular basis, going into the different schools, going into the different churches, providing messages of road safety to be able to teach this, the youngsters about compliances, and therefore to be able to change their attitudes and their behaviors. And we broken it down into the quarterly targets. I will not go into the different quarterly targets. Go into the next objective. Objective number 4. This one talks to the increment in terms of our staff. Our baseline at the moment is a total of 80 staff. We're looking at increasing that into the current financial year. We'll be looking at 175. Ultimately, over the 3-year period, we're looking into having a total number of about 250. That's also our strategy. Is not necessarily a complete increase in our internal staff, but through the strategic partnerships, we'll be appointing and empowering other strategic stakeholders. That's why the emphasis that we want to place on cooperatives, women and youth-owned businesses, so that they can be able to be at arm's length from us, but we are the ones that will be empowering them. As well as the acquisition of the related business tools and support systems that we want to be able to acquire, one of the biggest challenges that we've been experiencing is in respect of the system's functionality of the NATIS system. And fortunately, it is a challenge that we have taken together with the Department of Transport as well as our engagement with the RTMC to be able to come up with a solution of how we will be able to ensure that our systems have been acquired at the extent that they can support all the business processes that we have committed to. The last one on the enterprise development support programs, we're committing towards 9 enterprises that we want to be able to pilot. Over the next 2-3 years, we're looking at over 1,000, specifically 1,000 women and youth-owned enterprises, as well as cooperatives that we want to be able to empower for our programs of road safety in terms of making them ambassadors, as well as involving them in the implementation of the rehabilitation programs that would have already started taking effect in the 16-17 period. Then the quarterly targets over the next few slides. We then go on to the objective number 5, monitoring and evaluation. Just one slide back. Monitoring and one slide back. And evaluation system that has been established and institutionalized. In this respect, the focus that we want is always to have baseline and reports that will give us a understanding of the status that we are at. In respect of rehabilitation programs, in respect of systems operation, and in respect of the ARPA environment. And we are intending to produce 3 categories of reports. The first one would be a monitoring and evaluation report that would determine what was the status of compliance throughout the country before implementing ARTO on a national basis. And therefore, once you have that baseline, it becomes easier to continuously monitor the compliance as a result of the impact that ARTO is making. The second part of it is something that goes back onto our commitment as a country to the United Nations Decade of Action for Road Safety. And we will be able to produce international support on the basis of international benchmarking. We have already undertaken some of the trips, and we have strategic partnerships that have been established. And we are taking the challenge in terms of the leading countries. For example, Sweden have got what is called Vision Zero, and their commitment is we do not want to say we are going to save 10,000 lives. Because if you only say you will save 10,000 lives, you are basically saying the remaining 10,000 or whatever number of lives that you are prepared to lose, you are taking them as collateral damage. But in fact, our target should be there is not a single life that must be lost on the road network. There is nobody that deserves to be maimed or paralyzed by enjoying the use and the benefits of the road infrastructure network. That's why they've come up with what they term as Vision Zero. Similarly, we need to be able to come up with mechanisms that can show our forceful, unrelenting commitment to effect a change and ensure that everybody else understands not only their rights and roles, but can take the related action towards the achievement of those. The last category is a report on the public perceptions on the attitudes of ARTO. It is not only what we want to use ourselves and say we are judging that we have a positive impact, but go out there and see what are the public saying about ARTO, what is the public saying about government service as we deliver it to them. As well as the establishment of the ARTO call center, so that ultimately we're looking into providing a one-stop service so that anybody else that has any issues, they can be able to go to the center that has been fully managed, that will be operating on a real-time online information basis, that we have information at the tip of our fingers. Similarly, what we also are looking into is to providing our principals with the necessary empowerment in terms of the information. We have started that, and we have found that as the RCIA, we started with the provision of information that is very, very detailed, that provides the related analysis of the infringement status throughout the whole country. We started that with the municipalities of Tshwane, Johannesburg, Gauteng Department of Community Safety, as well as the RTMC, so that we will be able to empower the issuing authorities and say, on the basis of what you have captured, this is what the information says. And they must be able to take that, extrapolate the data, and use it to inform their proactive law enforcement activities. strategic partnerships with local and international institutions that will be established to enhance road safety. And this is also part of the commitment that we have to the decade of action, that we need to move with the times and ensure that we stay focused towards achieving our deliverables. The last objective that we have is all issuing authorities implementing ARPO. In this particular effect, the baseline is the four issuing authorities that are implementing it, and the focus that we have is finalizing all the related preparations before we go on a national rollout. The two main ones that we looked at, Chairperson, that are still outstanding is actually the promulgation of the related amendment, and those amendments are in the process, and they will shortly be coming through to the to Parliament for consideration. Once we have that, we would have a highly effective the system that we want to be able to implement. The second part, therefore, is in respect of the system's functionality, and those are the challenges that we've been engaging with the department as well as our sister agency, the RTMC. The financial resources in respect of our funding, these are the categories that our Act empowers us in respect of our portion of fees that are paid to the agents in terms of the Act, the government, the deductions from penalties that we would have collected ourselves, money that has been appropriated by Parliament, any other donations that we may receive or money that we are able to get from other sources, be it with strategic partners. We have also indicated that that is sufficient. That is not sufficient. It is unfortunate that the grant revenue that we're having has not been adequate from the very beginning, because we were never fully adequately capitalized from the beginning, and the revenue portion that comes to us is actually continuously dwindling. Last year we were operating on a grant of 25 for that 12-13 period. Last year it was 15.3 million. This upcoming financial year, we are expecting to be getting 11.3 million rand. The majority, the overwhelming majority of our revenue comes out from the actions that we take ourselves, with the understanding that the RTIA has got to be self-funding. So this is in respect of the infringement revenue that we are able to go out there and get. The total revenue projection is 186 million rand, slightly increasing as we'll be going, but from year 5, 6, and 7, we're going to start experiencing a diminishing return unless we come up with other mechanisms that will be able to ensure that we sustain ourselves and ensure that our environment keeps on being relevant in this respect. The majority of the expenditure that we have is going to be in respect of the encouragement of the payment of penalties. You see the projections that we have here, Chairperson, it is very high, 62 million over this current period, but yet it is going to start dwindling. And the reason for that is our anticipation that the Act would have been amended. And with the Act being amended, we will place much greater reliance on electronic service of documents instead of the traditional approach of currently saving either in person or by registered mail. That is the reason why 15-16 period is overwhelmingly greater than the years that will be progressing in there. The public awareness and education revised change, changing the behavior of the road users, and there's also strategic partnerships that we are striking in respect of that. That's why the amount of money that may not seem to be well balanced. However, we're looking at the best ways to be able to effect the fundamental change. So we're interlinking on the basis of the strategic partnerships that we are having. We go on to the next slide. The preparations in respect of the ARTO rollout is what will be able to keep us busy for the majority of the time, so that as soon as Parliament would have effected those promulgations, we have got all the issuing authorities ready to implement it. These are the challenges that we had looked at, Chairperson. Until such time that the Act amendment has been promulgated, we're still stating it as a challenge. The solution is the promulgation of the Amendment Act. Some of the key features that are included in there is lightening the burden and eliminating the current loopholes, because we have provided for rehabilitation programs, electronic service of documents, the removal of warrants to attach property, because currently the Act provides that as soon as one did not comply with the condition that has been given, and after the courtesy letters have been issued, as a registrar, I'm empowered to go and confiscate somebody's property and sell it to be able to defray costs. Now, looking at the social, the political environment that we're in, and also it is not something that is going to be justifiable, that I must authorize a poor person's television set or bed or fridge or any other property to be confiscated. That's why, even at this moment, I have never authorized anything to be able to attach anybody else's property to defray the cost in respect of outstanding infringements. Similarly, it is something that is also not in line with the current legislative development, with the promulgation of the National Credit Act and other acts there as well. It will be something extremely difficult and possibly unconstitutional if we were to try and implement it. So this is one of the key features that we want to be able to take out, as well as removing the distinction between the minor and the major infringements, with the understanding that all of them do have a negative impact in respect of either the loss or injury that may cause to somebody else. The approval of regulation amendments in support of the amendment bill, this is what is within the minister's ambit, yet we are then providing for the financial sustainability of the agency, as well as for the issuing, for all the issuing authorities. Because if we were to roll out the ARTO under the current legislative framework now, we would automatically bankrupt a lot of the municipalities, and therefore it is not something that we want to do. In respect of the NCR functionality, the lack of the correct address details on the NCR, the assessment that we had undertaken showed a 62% rejection by the South African Post Office. And the break in terms of the interface between the e-native system as well as the SAPO systems for the validation of those address details, because otherwise it is something that will result in fruitless expenditure. Having to send out information that goes out that has not been updated on the e-natives, where you have situations that some other addresses goes out and the address is indicated as unknown, and the only thing that they put there is a postal code. So if the address says it's unknown, the postal code is the Tshwane postal code, and the e-native system allows that to be delivered to the post office. The post office continues their own processes. It is something that is automatically fruitless, because you can never be able to deliver that at that particular address. So those are the correction in terms of the data integrity that we've been undertaking. The lack of updating on document delivery statuses, again, in respect of our own processes, anything that we are undertaking before I can authorize either a courtesy letter or an enforcement order, I need to have assurance that the initial infringement notice has actually been served. Without it being served, I cannot then proceed on to the next phases. The solution we are undertaking, the Chairperson, is the development of an integrated information system that we need to develop that would be fully supportive of our own processes, as well as the intervention that we continuously engaging with the Department of Transport, so that the e-native contractor can be able to cooperate fully with us here. And this is just unfortunate, because the National Contravention Register, the NCR, has been developed as a module of the e-natives. Given the contractual nature of what it entails, it actually delimits us as the RCIA, restricted to effect any changes or amendments to the functionality that we need embedded in the NCR to support our own processes. If we go on to the next slide, the funding challenges has crossed the stakeholders as a result of the data integrity, respect of the service of infringement notices, courtesy letters, and enforcement orders. Chairperson, after our presentation to this esteemed committee last year, one of the questions and advice that came from this committee was, what are the possibilities of us assessing the need to start the alternative methods of service even before the act has been undertaken? We started a pilot whereby we looked into the electronic service of documents by providing for a kind of interface with some of the other infringers. It is proven that our case is correct, that with the electronic service we will be able to not only achieve the objective of serving notices as quick as possible, but secondly, it will assist us in curtailing the unnecessary exorbitant expenditure that will be experienced by ourselves. So in this respect, together with the municipality of Johannesburg and Swanee, we have already piloted some of the other areas, and the results are looking very, very positive. The desperate and inefficient law enforcement practices, what we also recommending in support of our sister agency, the RTMC, this is something that will not only benefit the RTMC, it will benefit the RTIA, it will also benefit all the issuing authorities, proposing that we need to promulgate the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code. Once we promulgate the NRTLC, the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code, among the key issues that are provided is in Chapter 31 of that National Law Enforcement Code that provides principles, the basis of the principles for target setting, so that the issuing authority itself is in a position to set particular targets for the offices, the individual officers, for the particular shift, as well as monitoring that performance. It becomes a very proactive mechanism, because if we have that, we can be able to effect a direct impact in saving the lives of our citizens on the road. Because you can for once be in a position that issuing authorities cannot find themselves in a position where they decide and they skew their law enforcement towards revenue generation mechanisms. Because the only change that we can effect is when we have an interactive process that visible law enforcement has been implemented and officers can physically stop somebody on the road. Because by putting cameras, they can only detect me speeding on the road. They can never detect a person that is driving under the influence of drugs. They can never detect an unroadworthy motor vehicle. They can never detect an illegal motor vehicle that is driving without number plate. But with officers being on the road, with interactive policing, these are the greatest benefits that we can be able to achieve in this particular respect. As well as targeting the number of the vehicles and drivers that must be stopped and that will be checked for their fitness on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, and also on a monthly basis. The most important traffic violations, those ones that contribute towards crashes, to be targeted and to be monitored, the reports that we provide will be something that will be very beneficial. And here we have provided just a quick example. If we estimate to be 15,000, I know we've got a lot more officers now than that, but on the basis of 15,000 officers that reach just the minimum according to the shifts that we have, and we say they must be able to stop, an individual officer just stopped 3 motor cars per day, 3 minibuses, 2 buses, 1 motorcycle, 1 light delivery vehicle, and we've categorized all of them. That officer, in his or her shift, would have stopped 16 motor vehicles. Having stopped 16 motor vehicles, that gives you 256 on a monthly basis, 2,800. And therefore, we can have surety of a minimum target that we can easily achieve of 3.8 million vehicles and or drivers that would be checked on a monthly basis. And the impact of that would be something amazing. The impact of that is something that we can directly relate to the number of lives that would have been saved. If we go back just to the second caricature that we have put, that comical picture that I had of an unroadworthy vehicle, if we just quickly go right at the very bottom, at the very top. That caricature, if we're able to do this, then we can be able to stop these kind of things happening. We can stop these kind of things happening because an officer would not leave any motor vehicle, they would never let an unroadworthy vehicle leave their municipality. Let me take, Chairperson, just going towards the conclusion, just taking one example that I would expect a lot of our members would be familiar with. A lot of the times you might find, for example, our co-citizens from the SADC countries, they leave Hillbrow with a vehicle that when you see it, you know there is no way this motor vehicle is going to arrive safely. But it leaves Hillbrow, goes through to Midrand, and you can imagine the number of officers that they meet on the road. And it goes out of the boundaries of city of Johannesburg, goes across to the boundaries of Tshwane municipalities, and on across. And when you meet that particular vehicle, 150 kilometers away, you ask yourself how generous God can be sometimes by blessing them to have reached that place. But after 5 minutes, either the tires burst or something terrible happens and that vehicle gets involved in a crash. 5, 6, 7 people die there. We need to ask ourselves if we can have a situation that city of Johannesburg or city of Tshwane brags that the number of people that died in the municipalities is going down. Yet, if they had actually done their part, the number of people that die in Limpopo roads, that die in another province, would not have increased if they did their job in the first instance. So through the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code, when we implemented Chapter 31, gives us some of the best tools to be able to achieve our objectives. Chairperson, I truly thank you for your indulgence, and we just want to emphasize our full commitment towards the NDP as well as the decade of action, the targets and the commitments that we have towards saving the lives of the ordinary citizens in our country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, CEO. Colleagues, probably we may want to take RTMC so that when we deal with the questions, because the subject intertwined and related, that we change some of everybody at the go. RTMC. Or the fact. Sorry to have hijacked you. Don't call the police. Whilst you're preparing, let me welcome the Honorable Mulauzi. The feature nowadays is that since he's been an NEC member, they told him to be late. As an NEC member, he's always delayed, but not late.
Right on, brother. morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, Chairman of the Board, who will be joining us on his way, and colleagues. My name is Gilberta Martins, and I'm the Chief Operations Officer at the RTMC, and the Acting CEO, as the CEO is on leave as from today. First, let me tell you my apologies for Advocate Sibi, who is on leave, and certainly I will take you through our RTMC strategic plan for 2015-2020, and then our performance plan for 2015-2016. With me, I have an executive team which I am leading, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves, and I'm starting first on my left.
My name is Mthulisi Juma. I'm the Head of Strategy and Reporting in the RTMC.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. My name is Nonzikele Lojolingana. I'm the Executive for Law Enforcement in the RTMC.
Okay. Good morning, Honourable Chair, Members and Deputy Minister. I'm Leona Moorman. I'm the CFO of the RTMC.
Honourable Chair, Members and Deputy Minister, what we are going to share with you today is the strategic plans for the RTMC from 2015 to 2020, as well as the annual performance plans for 2015-2016. These documents arise from various interventions at the RTMC under the leadership of the CEO, and this obviously very importantly, just to contextualize the documents, that first of all, we've had various strategic planning session meetings with stakeholders and certainly other departments. We have reviewed the mandate of the RTMC to ensure that our objectives and our outputs are linked directly to the mandate. And having the board fully functional now, certainly together with the shareholder committee, under their guidance, we've made sure that what has been raised by them has certainly been addressed. Very important as well is the cooperation that we've had and the collective agreements that we've put together with our provinces resulted in our strategic plan for 2015 to 2020. In developing the plan, what we also took into cognizance was that we certainly seek to develop partnerships with national, provincial and local governments. We certainly understand our role in the National Development Plan and what we need to do to contribute to that, and obviously to contribute to the broad-based political economic empowerment as part of our progress in all the work we do. So those are the underlying policies that certainly we are cognizant when we develop our objectives, and together with the Millennium Goals. Equally, Chairperson, what we have not forgotten is the inputs that the members of this committee have given us. And we certainly have taken them to heart. We have reviewed them. And just to refresh our memories, I'm going to repeat it. And if I do pronounce your surname not the right way, I apologize right front. I was part of then with Honourable Member Ramaphosa. The concerns raised were certainly to review an alternative funding model, a uniform scale of employment for the traffic officers, and then effective monitoring of the traffic officers. We had Honourable Hunsinger, who was concerned about the backlog in the available information, the development of the 21st century CADA, and equally the K53. What was the RTMC looking at about the K53? Honourable Freitas was concerned about the standardization of traffic training, concerned about the SSL information, and also to deal with fraud and corruption. Honourable Borsello developed alternative funding model was certainly a concern. pedestrians. How do we educate pedestrians that were crossing on the highways and felt that this is a danger? And important that where accidents and crashes are happening, what are we doing about these particular spots of roads? Honourable Murawuti, the fragmentation of the traffic officers was a concern. That the RTMC should have national footprint to be the prime of guide, and more important, that in the rural areas, what were we doing to impact on road safety and traffic law enforcement? This was a concern. Honourable Radebe was concerned in the way that the accident report forms and the relationship between the police stations was being done. And secondly, and very important, was the three current areas of the mandate which are currently the DOT. Do we have the capacity to take it over? And lastly, when are we commencing with training our traffic officers? And then lastly, Honourable Sabanda was certainly saying the current legislation, is it helpful? Can you really implement your mandate for current registration? The standard data system, without crashes, what are we doing? And certainly the KPIs, what are the time frames and outputs? So, Honourable Chair, these are all the areas that we took into consideration in developing our 2015-2020 plan. And for that, we certainly believe that we've addressed them, and I will take you through it. I also want to just welcome the Chair of the Board as I was starting to. I don't know if you would like to say something or to our attention. Chair, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister, we're going to go through the vision and mission and values of the RTMC, and certainly they haven't changed. They were developed with our board and our shareholder committee, so they haven't changed, but I will go through them just to highlight them. We look at the strategic goals and objectives. We look at them with aligning them to the key government priorities, and then obviously the annual performance plan for 2015-16 with the targets and the outputs that we are projecting in line with the resource allocation which will be lost. The vision is safer roads in South Africa, and certainly that together with the board and our shoulder committee, it's what we've come up with. And when you look at our vision and mission, it's a national vision. So certainly our provinces, when we engage with our provinces, when we do projects and programs with our provinces, this is what we seek to do to create safer roads in South Africa. And certainly our mission is education and enforcement, engineering, evaluation, planning and coordination. Importantly in each of these areas is that in education, certainly we look at school programs, youth programs, and adult programs, which I will deal with later. Enforcement is a joint program between the National Traffic Police and all our provinces. Engineering is research. Once we establish a crash and investigation, we research that particular piece of road or any piece of the road to see what needs to be done to make it safer for the communities on those roads. We do evaluations, and that's basically on the programs that we've put together. The planning coordination is certainly with our provinces and our fundamental program, the 365 days road safety. It's not about the RTMC, it's the collective with all the nine provinces, and the partnership certainly with government and other entities, for example, StatsSA, that we've got an agreement with to certainly see how we get better data. So certainly I will be taking you through that. Certainly the values of the RTMC have not changed. We should pledge to be responsible and make sure that we do our mandate ethically and correct. We accountable, and that's really, really important as we enforce the law. Transparency, and that's good governance, and as I said, through the board and the chairman of the board and his members and the shareholder committee, it's certainly good governance that we're busy going through. And then obviously the goals of building internal and external relationships as a teamwork effort, because road safety is not about an individual, it's about the collective of all coming together. Now, the functional areas. There are four key functional areas, which are the law enforcement, the road safety, the capacity development, and information management. However, each of these are further broken down. So if you look at law enforcement, there are three areas. It's the road traffic law enforcement, it's the administrative adjudication of road traffic offences, and vehicle and roadworthiness in testing. Now, of those three which form the law enforcement, the one, for example, you look at road traffic law enforcement, and you look at administration of road traffic offences and vehicle and roadworthiness. The ones in red are currently with the Department of Transport. The administrative adjudication of road and traffic offences, that's currently with RTIA as a mandate. And the road traffic law enforcement is also sitting at not transferred in the totality to the RTMC. We look at road safety, we've got testing and licensing of drivers currently with the Department of Transport. However, in road safety, communication and education and infrastructure safety audits is with the RTMC, and hence the programs will address this. Capacity development, training of traffic personnel is with the RTMC, and hence the programs that we've put together. And finally, information management, virtual registration and licensing currently with the Department of Transport, and then road traffic information, which is the crashes and the fatalities with the RTMC, and the accident investigations and recording with the RTMC. So that's certainly the basis from where we develop our strategic plans, our APPs and our operational plans. If we look at the goals, this is 2014-2015, and if we recall, we reviewed these goals very aggressively with the team of the RTMC, with our board, and with the shareholder committee to ensure that what did we have to do better, or if these goals and objectives were still relevant for 15-16. So you'll see certainly that in 14-15, improve and institutionalize stakeholder relationships, and we indicated how we've done that. Enable legislation to promote road safety, improve financial sustainability, create a dynamic and transform organization, and foster good governance. Now, immediately what came out, and the actions that we did in the first one, improve institutional stakeholder relationships, that's what we did. We had several agreements signed, and there was a very close working relationship with the entities. To enhance the legislation to promote road safety, the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code, currently being reviewed to ensure that it certainly sets a standard nationally. And improving financial sustainability, we obviously were looking at various areas that we had cost containment that we wanted to implement, or that have implemented, and to develop an alternative funding model. And then to create a dynamic and transform organization, very important was a 21st century curriculum for a traffic officer. Norms and standards for road safety now, so road safety taking a prevalent role, and obviously an IT strategy which would certainly promote how we do things nationally and certainly have information available at all times. And lastly, the foster of good governance was we have appointed the executives at the RTMC, which unfortunately for a while they were not there, but they've all been appointed. Policies are in place, and obviously we're now looking at how we do our resources. We then, in 2015 to 2020, the strategic goals, well, we redefined them. We felt that we'd learned the lesson, we reviewed, we'd taken cognizance of what has been said to us, and we said, well, firstly, one important objective is to promote and create a safer road environment. And in there, we had five key output areas. The second area was to integrate and coordinate the road safety and traffic environment with three key areas. And obviously, leverage of funding for road safety programs with one key area, and create a dynamic and transformed organization. Now, that became our redefinition of the objectives of 2014-15, and soon as a strategic plan, these are the strategic objectives of 2015 to 2020. Government priorities are very, very important. The National Development Plan. The RTMC believes, and is responsible, that it's has a role to play, and in priority of economic infrastructure under the strategic objective of to promote and create a safer road environment, very important education, enforcement, and a change of behavior to contribute to that economic infrastructure. Promotion of health, again under the create a safer road strategic objective, the objective was certainly to reduce accidents and injuries. Building safer communities, the professionalization of the police traffic services, very important, and an integrated approach to building safety on our roads. And in the last priority, promoting accountability and fighting corruption, the strengthening of the multi-agencies on the corruption system, and how the RTMC with its unit deals with corruption nationally. The annual plan. The annual plan has five programs. The first program is operations, which has then three sectors. It's the road safety coordination, education and communication, It has a second sub-program called Training of Traffic Personnel, and the third sub-program, Road Traffic Information. Law Enforcement is a separate program, then has its National Traffic Police, Law Enforcement Standards, Planning and Coordination. Traffic Intelligence Systems has the National Traffic Anti-Fraud and Corruption. Strategic Services, obviously stakeholder management is very important to us, and then Research and Development, and Support Services, Financial Sustainability and Human Resource and Information Technology. There are key milestones that we believe we need to deliver in 2015-16 following the outcomes of our objectives and our strategic plan. And the first one is to develop a national road safety strategy to respond to the key national, regional and global priorities. The second one, to coordinate the planning and alignment of interventions across the country, and that's certainly to achieve the objectives that collectively we're trying to achieve. Effective data management, monitoring and evaluation, and then using those to implement programs in those particular areas. Development of road safety research, and I think that's very important because it's a multidisciplinary area, so it's the engineering field, it's the medical field, to see what is the most effective of how we do that. National campaigns, so that it becomes second nature to people. It's not only happening in a particular province, it could happen nationally, to develop those national campaigns. Norman stands for road safety, and that's important, for road safety at the moment is seen as a by the way and not really with effective norms and standards. So certainly we will be currently developing a curriculum for road safety officers together with the 21st century traffic officer, which has been developed as well. Increased private sector participation, that's very important for us. Alternative funding, which we will talk about, for funding avenues for road safety and for the traffic environment. And then setting an ICT governance structure that we can certainly invest in new technology to ensure that the road safety and the methodology that we use are more accurate and we can take quicker action. So I can give you a very simple example, Chair and Honourable Members, Deputy Minister. At the moment we have a program where you stop and check vehicles. But unfortunately you stop and check and you have to rewrite everything. So you literally sit and ask someone for their driver's license and you write them. We say there's technology now which you could just scan the barcode on your license disc. And it uploads it, it downloads it to a central point, and immediately it's there. So we're looking at innovation. We're looking at innovation just to make sure that certainly use what's out there in availability, because we certainly believe it will make an impact on our road safety. If I take you through the programs and objectives per program and the KPIs, program one. It's the road safety coordination, education and communication. And the KPI 1 is the national road safety strategy, which we say has to be complete and it will be forwarded to the board for approval. Number 2, the number of road safety evaluation reports, and those are transversal indicators with the provinces, 4 reports. So that would be a quarterly report back of what we are, the implementation and the strategies that are being implemented in the provinces. Youth programs implemented, 2 youth programs. Now these, Chair, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister, these are RTMC, so it's the provinces are doing their own, but these are the RTMC outputs in line with our budget. Number of road safety educational programs implemented, 4 road safety educational programs will be implemented. Number of road safety marketing campaigns in line with the 365 day of the year program, there will be 12 national road safety campaigns, and then a number of community-based programs, there will be 2 that will be implemented through the RTMC. How do we want to do this? We want to do it in 2 areas. First of all, you need to build capacity to achieve this within that area, and secondly, it must be sustainable. So immediately when one looks at road safety, you go look at qualifications. What's very, very important is that some of the areas have been developed coming from last year, and they just need to be continually enhanced and certainly grown into the next phase. So on the qualifications, we're developing the normal standards. We want to develop the road safety qualification, which will be accredited by the QCTO, and then driving school instructor qualification. Now, these have a legislative impact, but certainly with the Department of Transport, we're working very closely to ensure that these come in as a groundwork to ensure that we get a better quality driver. We're looking at training, so certainly any current road safety officers that are out there will be retrained in the formal curriculum. And then in terms of recruitment, the idea would be to recruit lecturers and the recruitment of road safety community liaison officers. Why? Because they're in the community, and once trained, they can certainly spread the message of road safety into those areas. How do we sustain this? Well, first of all, we have established the National Road Safety Advisory Council. There are community road safety councils, and of course the road safety awareness, communication and marketing, which we do nationally together with our provinces. We build relationships, because it's very, very important. It's a collective that we have to do. It's not just the RTMC on its own. And yes, the provinces have been really proactive, and certainly we come together in developing, for example, national programs and national plans. And then there's the private partnership and the NGOs, who also have a role to play. And obviously, the last is the integration, where you want to develop everything in line with the National Road Safety Strategy and align the programs of road safety together with law enforcement. If I go on to KPI 7, developing of the training material for the traffic officer curriculum, and this is the 21st century traffic officer, where the previous NQF level 4, grade 12 NQF level 4 is being reviewed or has been reviewed, and would go to NQF level 5 and NQF level 6. Currently, it's with the QCTO to be reviewed to see whether they will accrue to that level of the NQF level 5 and NQF level 6. And the intention then would be to certainly look at new traffic officers and the existing ones to try and get to the same level. And the KPI 8 is the development of a road safety officer curriculum. So we have a standardization of road safety officers and outputs within the province and how they would deal with road safety as a collective. Once again, how are we going to do this? Certainly, it's again about building capacity. And for us, it's the basic training officer qualification and the curriculum, which has been reviewed. It's the upskilling, and the upskilling refers to current traffic officers and the new trainees that certainly one would need and one in the deployment model would look at. And obviously establishing partnerships with institutions of higher learning. Unfortunately, the traffic official and the qualifications are limited. So you have a TUT that's doing it, and then you have a license that's doing it, but it's not done at that level in all the universities. So we certainly try to develop partnerships to see how we can grow the area where the institutions of higher learning would be able to deliver such a course. And lastly, the recruitment of 1,000 new traffic officers to be recruited in January. Obviously, we have started, but Honourable Chair, Honourable Member, Deputy Minister, we received 142,000 applications for these 1,000 jobs. So certainly the demand is very high, and we've basically been going through the screen to see how we are going to address the 100,000 new traffic officers. Of what is interesting to note as well is that you also have applications from current traffic officers. You perceive that the RTMC is a better place to be than, for example, at a metro, at a local government. So we're busy going through that to see the criteria, how one selects new recruits as opposed to just redoing with existing recruits. Sustainability, sense of excellence. Yes, RTMC believes that we do need to have a sense of excellence where you'd implement the 21st century traffic officer, where lectures will be done by lecturers. At the moment, in the traffic training colleges, 13 of them, Chair, the reality is that they are being lectured by traffic officers themselves, by facilitators. So the quality of training we've looked at very carefully, and we're saying we need to make sure that the quality of training at our current 13 traffic training centres, training colleges, would certainly be an upskilling and ongoing. But the centre of excellence would be a starting point when you're certainly at the 21st century and you could go through a three-year phase. The national deployment, we are developing a deployment model, and very important for us is to understand what is the reality out there. Colleague CEO of RTO was saying, for example, the 15,000, 17,000, 24,000, and we really need to know exactly what's there. And once you know exactly what's there, to say, well, how effective is the working? And we all know, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members and Deputy Minister, for example, the shift system, the 24/7 shift system, has become a big debate. If you do implement a shift system like that, your numbers need to be more, because you need to obviously have people at different parts. And so certainly it's a deployment model that you're busy working on to try and ensure the professionalization of the traffic official. And lastly, the career progression. Something which sadly has not been taken care of, and you say, how do traffic officers do not remain in the same stagnant area? How do they move along? And it's very, very important to us that there's a professional development, so they would be required to do certain courses to get professional points to keep moving along the system. KPI 9, the number of state road safety reports, 7 state of road safety reports published. That's very important, and we take those reports as a baseline to do intervention plans. Nationally, the reports are put together, and it's based on information that we obtain through the RTMC, through our provinces, and the interventions of our road safety programs. The effectiveness of them and how do we address them in the long term. And KPI 10, the National Road Traffic Information Database concept document approved by the board. Well, that's now to say we need to have one central point of information. But what you do want to know is ensure that if at a press of a button, ideally you could say monthly or weekly exactly what the statistics are for fatalities and crashes at any point of the country, and that's certainly what we're trying to look at, as opposed to currently it is difficult because provinces would have their own systems and not necessarily linking back to our system. Once again, we're looking at the capacity and how we're going to do it. The norms and standards have been developed, they've been defined, and why do we want norms and standards? It's really important that we all talk and monitor and measure the same thing, so we don't all do different things. It's interesting because there seems to be an indication that certain provinces on a weekend will be on the radio saying, well, this weekend we had 10 fatalities, but other provinces battle. So we're just trying to get a normal standard that we put together, and you want to publish these reports. I think it's important so people are aware of what's happening. The systems, we need to certainly get a credible system where people cannot question or estimate the fatalities. And lastly, the accident report forms, which currently are filled in by SAPS, currently taken to a police station, housed at a police station, creates two major problems to honourable members and deputy minister. First of all, if there's a fatality, it becomes a crime, and therefore that docket sits as part of a legal process, which means the RTMC cannot just get that docket to capture information. And secondly, sadly, if you have a taxi accident and there's 10 fatalities, it's one accident report number. It's one case number, even though there's 10 fatalities. So it's those things that we're looking at to see the effectiveness of the form, the effectiveness of the police station, and how do we as RTMC intervene on that. In terms of sustainability, we'd like to certainly streamline all the systems across and to obtain data, because we believe it's possible, and set up supporting structures, which would be independent road traffic information committees. Currently, we've got MOUs with Stats SA, with Home Affairs and CSIR. Why? They have an access base. They have a way of dealing currently, so we'd like to tap in with them. And certainly with the Medical Research Council, very important. How can we, the pathologists, to ensure that our information is really, really correct and available often? Often in the sense of if it's a weekly or a monthly. And obviously, the RTMC, the national footprint, which was a concern raised by some honourable members, that's important because RTMC seeks to coordinate, to cooperate, and to provide leadership within the province collectively together. So certainly that's also what we're currently doing at the moment. Law enforcement. KPI 11. Vehicles stopped and checked by the National Traffic Police, 400,000. That's the target that we've set for 400,000. We have approximately 200 officers, so that's the target that we have set. Number of drunk driving operations conducted in collaboration with the provinces. Now, this is very important because it means it's a national intervention, it's a national program. So sometimes you even have two or three provinces at the same roadblock because, for example, it might be Free State, KZN, and Gauteng. So these are the national programs that we're doing. Besides this, the NTP do their own operations, and obviously speed operations in collaboration with the provinces as part of the 365 road safety program also takes place nationally. The submission of the National Road Traffic Law Enforcement Code. As we know, the code was drafted in 2008. It went out for public comments in 2009. There was some comments in 2010. 2013 was put out again for public comments. And this is now being re-looked at to make sure, first of all, the span of the code, and equally, what are the key areas that need to be addressed as a matter of urgency, and that's what we are doing as the RTMC. And the number of law enforcement evaluation reports, which are transversal indicators by the province, we've got 4 of those on a quarterly basis as well. trapping intelligence security, perceives of corruption and fraud complaints investigated, and all cases that certainly are known or come to the attention of the RTC through the National Traffic Anti-Corruption Unit are investigated. The number of anti-fraud corruption awareness programs implemented, and you'll see we've got 25 anti-fraud and corruption awareness programs implemented, and that's nationally. The NTP goes out nationally and presents these courses to the various officials, the various entities, and certainly traffic law enforcement officers. Strategic services, KPI 18, number of road safety programs implemented in collaboration with the private sector, and so we've got six programs, and very important for us is public transport and, for example, the freight association. So you look at Malotta Road, you look at Patka, for example, on Malotta Road, you create programs that the passengers on that road in Patka with us collaboration get information on road safety. And then the number of CSR programs are corporate social responsibility. We have eight. And the intention is that these eight, you want to see them per month. And the theme would be, for example, you'd have Workers' Month in May, you'd have the Youth Month in June, you would have the Mandela Month in July, Women's Month in August, Heritage Month in September, and of course, obviously, the Transport Month in October. And the idea is that you're certainly creating not only a social program, but more important, it's underpinned by road safety education. If we go to KPI 20, number of road safety research reports published, and that's two road safety research reports published. And these are reports that are shared internationally with the World Health Organization, with the UN, and these reports set out what is happening in our country and even at the point the impact it has on our continent. So certainly these are certainly high-level reports, and from there it's an intention to try and obtain what are the things that we need to do to address the findings of those reports. Support services finally. The funding model. A number of assessment reports on the implementation of the funding model. We've had three reports on the implementation of the funding model, and the funding model is the alternative funding model, and these reports will deal with the effectiveness of these funding models to certainly be able to generate funding for the RTMC. Go to KPI 22, and that's the human resource management, reduced percentage vacancy to 10%, and that's the rate maintained on active positions, which means they are funded and vacant. So it's not about the unfunded, because those certainly would inform this case. It says 10% of the funded and vacant positions. On KPI 23, percentage of performance agreements concluded at and moderates on time. Certainly it's 100%. So all the officials will have their performance agreements in place in line with the requirements and the time frames. And the percentage of work skills plan targets, 80% of the workplace skills plan target, and that's every official has a work skills plan target, and certainly the percentage of the compensation is taken out to achieve this, and it tends to become 80% of funding that is achieved to do that program. KPI 25, number of assessment reports on the implementation of an approved ICT strategy. These are four assessment reports and on how the implementation of the approved ICT strategy, which is quarterly. So every quarterly, the ICT would need to report back to indicate what has been achieved and the effectiveness of what's been implemented. It could be data capturing, it could just be the management of the systems in the RTMC. Resource allocation. This is the organizational structure, and it's a high-level structure, and it's noted that there's a board, there's an audit committee, there's a company secretary, directly below that is the chief executive officer. Directly below that you have a chief internal audit, and then the CEO's office directly underneath it. You've then got the group managers, which is the executive legal and compliance, chief financial officer, chief operations officer, chief human capital, executive national law enforcement, chief information officer, and a trading account. Now the trading account, and I will speak to it just on my next slide, is in relation to the eNATIS program, and I will refer back to it. On those seven senior posts, the first one, executive legal and compliance, has been advertised. The chief financial officer has been filled, chief operation officer has been filled, chief human capital has been filled, executive national law enforcement has been filled, chief information officer is being advertised, and the trading account, it's a program that will be developed or in place with the eNATIS transaction and when the eNATIS contract comes to an end. What is our budgetary envelope that we're looking at? Well, the MTF for the budget allocation for 15-16 is 659 million. That's a 5.6 increase as per the 2014 budget as per the National Treasury Regulations. The budget required, and the budget required 2015-16 is approved by the RTMC Board, and based on the programs and projects that we have been looking at is 1.59 billion, which includes the 659. Includes the transfer of e-notice to the RTMC on the ending of the contract, and then obviously it will still be presented to the board, that particular area of the 1.59 billion, together with the e-notice contract. How does this translate? That's our translate into in our story at the top, and I'm going to start off on the second column, the MTF budget allocations for 2015-2016. Goods and services 403, compensation of employees 170, capital expenditure 85, which gives a total of 659. When you factor in all the projects that we do, that we seek to do and what the mandate requires us to achieve, you then go to the first column, which is the requirements for 15-16, which is at the end of the 1.4 billion, which we're sitting at the bottom. If you compare that to the 2014-2015 budget, you can see that it was a 624 versus a 659, which means that it was simply a 5.6 increase to the 624, which gave us the 659. However, if you look at the budget requirement below, goods and services, the requirement is an increase of 160%, the compensation of employees is 88%, and then the capital expenses is 5%. And that's what we are looking for to achieve the 1.45. The third column, the 17%, 5%, and minus 29%, that was the increments from the 2013-14 budget. So we had a 17% in goods and services and a 5% in compensation. However, there was certainly at least 29% on the capital expenditure. If we break it down further into the programs, and I'll go through the programs summary, operations, which is program number one, you'll see that the 2014-15 budget in the first column, 2015-16, and the budget requirement of the 2015-16, which obviously is the 1.4. So we have the two columns. The budget available, 659, budget required, 1.4 billion. So those would be the numbers that we're looking at. And if we look at the, for example, training of, you'll see some quite sharp increases. For example, the training of personnel to 306 million as opposed to 15, that's the new recruits. The rest of the figures are fairly stable, and certainly where we've got less requirement, it's been due to some cost-cutting measures and the methodologies that we're working with. And then if we come right to the bottom, which is support services, it's eNATIS, trading account, road traffic management, you'll see there 194. And on the next slide, I will show the breakdown of the eNATIS program. So certainly that's the kind of numbers that we're looking at, and the figures that we've got in terms of our budget. If you look at the 194 of the eNATIS, it's an operational cost, it's the site maintenance cost, and it's the services cost, which I will pick up in a slide, in the next slide. What are the key projects that the RTMC has got? These are the critical projects for us to deliver on road safety and traffic law enforcement. First of all, the training of 1,000 traffic officers. The National Road Safety Debates and the Scholar Patrol Program, together with the Junior Traffic Training Centers, are very critical to us. And in the State of the Nation reporting, and it's important these reports are done so one can take action based on the findings that we have to build the database project. The law enforcement, the development of the law enforcement code is very important. And then some high impact operations and collaborations with our provinces, that's very, very critical for us. Strategic service, road safety awareness campaigns, corporate social investment and obviously promotional items, together with the traffic offence survey and the crash study update, which we do on a monthly from the reports that we obtain. And then on support services, there's two areas, the implementation of a disaster recovery plan, which is very critical for us in terms of our IT systems, and then obviously the eNATIS area. The eNATIS costs that we have now been able to ascertain per annum, the staffing cost is 116 million, the operational cost is 126, site maintenance 26, and deployment services 42, so 310 million per annum. I thank you, Chair. I thank honourable members. I don't know if my team have covered everything. Chair.
Thank you very much to the point, honourable members. There we are. I'm not going to be very strict. You will always be referring so that they can be aware where the question is going to RTIA or RTMC. You will have to be specific. Honourable Madiga, Honourable Ramatakan, along that line.
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to the deputy minister. Let's start by welcoming the presentations that have just been made. I've got some few questions. One, that with the first presentation, dealing with the question of the demerit points. This has been spoken of for a number of years, so one wants to check the readiness as to when do you think this can really be implemented, because this has been spoken of for quite some time. Number two is the issue of the road accidents. With road accidents, in most of the cases, the road accidents will take place during a holiday, and most of them are caused by the public transport, so to say. I don't know whether there is a way of dealing with fatigue, because you will understand that the many buses are all over, they are operating as we speak, but there is not much of the accidents that are reported like it happens during holiday. Wanted to check then, therefore, as to, is there a way that the question of fatigue, because you will understand that drivers find themselves working under pressure during those times, and even the truck drivers, because they have to deliver a lot before they go for holidays. Because it's, in most of the cases, you will not find a Mercedes colliding with another Mercedes. It's those many buses and trucks. With regards to the traffic officers and those that are taking some bribes, maybe in the when they are testing the drivers, I just want to check from the CEO, if are you satisfied with the salaries that these people who are working with this cash, who are exposed into this cash, compared to their salaries? Is there a way maybe the department can try and look into maybe improvement. I'm not saying they are corrupt because they are not well paid, but just to look into that. And I did not understand when you spoke of the level of the amount of unpaid infringement penalties and fees collected, when you say in you will collect 270, and then 2017-2018 you're expecting to collect 572. Whether that means you are expecting the number of unpaid infringements to increase, or you are saying you do not have the capacity now to deal with that, because if you are expecting to collect more and you can't do it now, because I would expect that if you can increase the number of the collections now, you'd be expecting to collect less in few years in few years to come. And I wonder if you have got a system that when you spoke of the one traffic officer having to stop a particular number of the vehicles, if there is a clear proof at the end of the day to prove that indeed this traffic officer has stopped so many cars, so many buses and so on and so forth, because I think it's clear when you stop a vehicle and you find that maybe the driver has broken or there's something wrong with the vehicle, because there would be a ticket issued. I think that one is very, it's easy to prove that. But say you stop a person and there's nothing wrong, the car goes, how do you then see that there was a car that was stopped and there was nothing wrong found in that particular car? And lastly, to the RTMC, you spoke of the 1,000 traffic officers that you are in a process of recruiting. So I just want to check if the 1,000 traffic officers that you are recruiting are the national traffic officers, or they will be distributed also among the provinces. And also I'm worried about the fact that you have indicated that you are receiving volumes and volumes of the applications. If they are not distributed among the provinces, it's going to be the national thing. If you will be able to guard against the situation that took place in Pietermaritzburg, when more than thousands of applicants were invited the same day to be assessed, and you know what happened thereafter. So I don't think we would be expecting to head for such an incident again. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just a quick question on the first presentation. I think let's thank the presenters. I think the presenters has made a big case on the importance of the work they do. But what I just lack in the presentation, maybe when we have another discussion, we can have this discussion, is that largely the work that entirely for maximum output on the issues that you raise depend on partnerships, depend on the partnership, stakeholder partnership, first stakeholder program, and education. Now, I looked at a presentation about you're going to have 8 schools here and there's a program. It sounds to me as a tinkering, not going for big, for maximum output. for an example, the Western Cape alone has got 1.2 million learners per annum. So if we were to introduce even the program that is a collaborative, I'm just making one example of eight programs, in terms of education and empowering of learners, because the most effective people who can also stop a father from driving under the influence is a child who has been conscientized to a level of understanding that alcohol or driving under the influence has this effect. And the child can say, I don't get into this car when daddy is driving like this. So I'm asking the question of, because you can't do it on yourself, you need to have stakeholders that are going to implement this. So I'm lacking that kind of approach in your, maybe it's going to come as the detail goes in. That's the first one. The second one, I was looking at the collaboration, your own collaboration with the Department of Education, but that will be led by the Department of Transport, around the very same program that you begin to look at. It has been happening, but very small, this issue about a safety program at school. It depends on how conscious or willing is the principal at that school at odd hours that they are able to implement this. So I'm asking the question of the kind of, that kind of collaboration I'm looking at, which I'm not getting. The partnership in the stakeholder partnership, it talks to radio. The issue about taxes, what is it that they can play as a slot in a radio that you don't have to pay for? But as a result of the collaboration and partnership with radio, whether it's the SABC radio in terms of this particular, because we know the market, where the market is. So that's what I'm not quite getting in here. It looks like you want to fly into the 50 million while you are a small operator, but the strategy of collaborations, I think that for me, is critical, which is what I'm not quite getting. Maybe in your response you'll be able to say it, but when I look at what you present, you're presenting tinkering, small hit, but with the less outcome of it. The last question around that was the meetings. I was at the 9 meetings for the provinces. I wasn't, because the detail is high level. You don't quite understand who is this partnership with the province. Who are you meeting? What is it, the outcome that is expected? It's like putting fire on paper. That's big fire now and off it goes. So that's the question I'm having in terms of the first presentation. And the last one, Chair, is the targets. The targets are being worked out on the current operational method that include all the complications, but there is a process of amending of the legislation. I don't know whether this is going to change, because I look at the target in terms of what you're targeting, the numbers. The numbers are fairly small compared to the big problem. Now, you will help me to understand that, because we're looking at 15,000, then it goes to 3,000. So it's become lesser. I don't know whether your capacity become lesser, or the compliance and the voluntary compliance and adherence become more, and it therefore reduces the number, or the output numbers. I don't know whether I'm making sense on what I'm asking. So what are they going to change magnitude of the numbers, whether it's the representation that we're talking about in terms of number? If you go the simpler route of less registration with the technology of emailing that we're talking about, and so this does not come out here. And I don't know whether it's projection that the 3 year, the outer period for the legislation will still be not finalized, therefore you're still going to go to the slow process. That is on the RTA. The quick one on RTMC, Chair. The traffic as essential service is not not quite mentioned. Now, you can speak about all other things, but if you don't have a warm body, visibility is also give you some kind of deterrent. If you see a traffic of blue light on the road, even if the traffic is somewhere in the bush, but as long as you see the light on the, that, you begin to say, hey, is my safety belt on? Am I driving correctly? But if you have less numbers, because you have an impediment of the traffic not as essential service, this discussion we had before, and there was a process of saying we will get to where there is everybody crying and screaming and kicking, but we will have essential service. Because motor drivers is 24/7, but the traffic don't. Why are we struggling with making sure that if we have to legalize, if it's one of the single things that you say we want to achieve, even before you get into the numbers that you're talking about, is that issue for me. When you declare that this is now the rules, you're going to function on the basis of this. You are going to work a roster. You're going to work 24. It's not necessarily going to only be an 8-hour shift. This is not clerks. This is, their job is different. So I don't know, it was not mentioned. Maybe I'm talking a lot on that issue, but I think for me, and I didn't see it coming out quite clearly as one of the targets and objectives as an outcome. Maybe when we talk to the department, that will come out in terms of the process of legislation. But for me, I think we've been talking about for too long. We're not making progress. We're crying about the effect of it, but we don't have people to manage it. We don't have people to make sure that it's there. So what is it that we need to do? Can I ask a question? I think it's really just kind of graduating the question that has been asked already. The 1,000 traffic officers that are going to be employed. My understanding is that the training of them, the employment, and when they hit the road, is 2 years down the line, or is it now 6 months? My understanding was that they were trained more or less the same as the traffic police, and therefore the curriculum is 2 years. They go 2 years. And you're not going to see them, you're only going to see them at the end of the period, because they're going to be... So what we're seeing here is that it's going to be the outer year when you're going to be able to see them on the road. That's just a clarity question. Then quick last, to leave for other members the question. I had a look at your... 5-year strategic plan. I had a look at annual APP. My worry of how the targeted measurability of this objectivity that we have, I think, I don't want to say at this, but probably I'm gravitating towards saying that. It's a quick job. It's a quick job that has been done in terms of writing them out. In terms of the specificness of them, the output, the actual output that we know, we're going to keep you accountable onto them. Some blocks are empty. Some blocks is on the 31st of March. I'm making an example. Assumption here, because the block will be ticked at the fourth quarter. And the fourth quarter will be looking at the next budget. For an example, the issue about safety strategy, road safety strategy. Why must it be on the last quarter, for an example, of this year? The fourth quarter is the 31st of March 2016, when we have a crisis now. And the road safety is not a new issue. The whole thing about the plan of it is not a new issue. All what we need to deal with, we know. All has been documented. It's a review or refining. So I don't know, Chair, why at the end of the term. Is a process that is going to, you need 9 months or 11 months and few days before the end of the year before you can come up with a strategy. I don't think so. I think that we have lots of So my worry, and I'm making example on that issue, and I can go down to a number of them, those are measurability of them. They're not quite good for us to be able to say we want to make sure we make headway. Because if we have gap in between, the issue of our accountability and for us to be able to keep you to your ways is very moving target. And that's why I'm saying perhaps I don't want to say perhaps we would need to, in the in-year quarterly review process, we should try and refine them and make them so that we can be able to keep you to them and be able to see the simplicity and time-bound stuff, all those things that goes with the issue of measurability. At the moment, they are not. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thanks, Chairperson, and greetings to my Honorable Deputy Minister and the Chairperson of the Board of Action. Honorable members, although most of the questions were covered by the former MEC of Transport, Mr. Ramakaka. That's why he knows this. And myself and Paul, you will ask so many questions, don't mind, because we've been in this fraternity. So, on the first presentation by the registrar, Mr. George Chowell, it's about the removal of the warrant of execution of properties. And what strategy are you going to use to repair the money for those who will reluctantly so not fail to pay to follow the procedures of the RTA and not pay? What are you going to do to get the money which is going to be lost? Maybe you can briefly tell us. The second question is on the refund. We heard that in Johannesburg, they said people were issued with the summons for speed law enforcement. Now there is a court ruling that they must go and take their money back. What impact is it going to cause the entity, the act here, about that? Is it that money going to be deducted from you or from the City Council of Johannesburg? The issue of the merit point system, as mentioned by the latter honorable member, how are you going to? I think it will be very difficult for you to deal with the merit point system without the cooperation of the inactives. But as I saw somewhere, you said you want the inactives to be under the RTMC, maybe as your sister entity, it will assist you. I'm done with the RTA. Now I'm coming to the RTMC. RTMC, in page 3 of your presentation, you talk about the vision of safe roads in South Africa, but in real practice your vision is very much good in papers, but our roads are not safe, as you know. And our roads now, even the accident accident, they increase. And I can see you have a very good plan to reduce accident. But if you can check at page 5 about the function areas, some of the function areas at page 5, they are still in yellow, not transferred, some they are still in red, withheld. But your plan is all about those function areas. So I want to ask maybe the Department of Transport, how long are we going to take to transfer fully this function to the RTMC? Because their plan is covering all the areas, but they can't enforce, they can't practically manage that because it's not fully to them. And we understand that some like law enforcement, it has a constitutionally effective. But we are the lawmakers here in Parliament. Draft something, bring it, go to Parliament, we attempt it, we get two-third majority, the change now, because you will be planning each and every year. You see? So the ruling party and its children in Parliament will make it possible. There are so many children in Parliament, COP, EFF, UDM, PAC, they will support. So draft, do something so that this thing must be fully fledged, because the intention of the RTMC to be established was to deal away with the fragmentation of the traffic law enforcement in the country. So, and we can't just say this, the RTMC can just run along without all the functional areas. Let's do something so that it can have a full-fledged operation. Because even at page 21, we talk about the national footprint, about the offices on all provinces. That's very good. But look, the fragmentation now in the law enforcement, you are adding. We have 5 uniform of traffic personnel in one country operating one road traffic act. We have the RTMC, they have their own uniform. We have the metros, they have their own uniform. We have Eastern Cape, they have their own uniform. We have Limpopo, they have all khakis and everything, including the subs. So this is confusing. We are confusing the driver. Let's say if there is a motorist from overseas who came here and find this one is talking, telling you about safety belt, the other uniforms. Now we can't operate like this. All these law enforcement and the security clusters, their uniform, they're the same. Soldiers, police. Why is it? You see, even the national, these rangers, they're wearing the same uniform. But traffic officers, they are not in the same uniform. Please, can't you regulate this so that RTMC must be seen as a body regulating? Even if you don't have powers, the department must give them powers to regulate the ranking system, the uniform, and everything. So, because now everything is exact, other ranks are different. We don't know whether we are in the different country or sovereign country or we are on the federal state. The page 38, the RTMC is talking about the transfer of inactives. I don't know how, because it's like now the department, they have a problem with this contract of inactives. They're even going to court about that. It's like some maladministration was caused there, but it is going to be relevant for the inactives to be under agency. So we want clarity about the case which is there about the contract of inactives with the department. The budget, yes, I can see the budget, they give you about 6% increment. But according to the researchers and what we see, they are saying where the country is losing about 30 billion per annum because of the road accidents in our roads. Hence, we are giving RTMC just as little as half a million to run the country. Why don't we take the money we're losing and give it to RTMC so that they can fully fledged make it practical of their visions? Look, even the board approved 1.5 billion. So that they are saying that if we can get 1.5 billion, we will be able to deal with what we want to do. So we're asking the department that why don't you cut that expenditure we are losing each and every year, the billions, and you take maybe 2 billion and give them to the RTMC, and we give them a mandate that they must convince us that they will reduce accidents. Because as the latter honorable said, how can we reduce accident when the vehicles are moving 24/7? But our traffic law enforcement, the latest shift is up to 10 o'clock. It means the people will be drinking. After 10 o'clock, they will go to the road and commit accident. Each and every year, we find our statistic of accident growing because we don't have enough personnel in the roads. Let's give RTMC more money to employ so many officers so that the omnipresence must be available on our roads, because it deters the traffic offenders to act on the other way around. So now all the vehicles, as you had the CEO of the RTS said, you go to Hillsboro, you find the car tag. Those cars, they wait until late hours. That's why you find most of the accidents happen after 12 o'clock, because there's no officers on the roads. People, they take risk and drive there and kill each other there, and the statistics is on our books. So we are pleading that as the board has asked the money in order to operate fully, we support that the department must make me to convince the treasury in order to cut this expenditure. They are talking about 38 billion per year wasted because of the road carnage. Let's cut 2 billion, give it to the RTMC, give them mandate, tell them what to do. You see, the accident will be reduced. But now each and every year will just come here and tell us this thing, good plans and everything. But without resources, without flesh bodies on our roads, nothing will happen. We'll just go to the press conference and tell the drivers that people must obey the traffic law. We need law enforcement on our roads. And the other thing is to ban the alcohol as per another life strategy. I know Honorable Hadeo Nebulu is against this. The arrival left strategy says don't drink and drive, simple as that. But our act says you can drink for some percentage and drive. It's a contradiction. So we must just say, in the countries where you don't drink and drive, like Saudi Arabia, the accident is very low. Because once you drink, they don't even go to the hospitals, the doctors, they just hear you smelling and arrest you. So, yeah, you see, they are very strict, even in India. In India, they are very populated area, but don't drink and drive. So let's change the legislation about this drinking and driving. And I'm happy about the retesting of the renewal of the licenses. I heard the minister was saying that, and we said the ministry, thank you very much. Let's make it a law that each and every 5 years when we renew the driver's license, there must be at least a testing to see whether we can drive or not. And also that thing of amending that a person who was in graduate school with code EC10 must only drive code EC10. Because there's two different between the code 8 and code 10 or EC and B. So if you're going to drive the small cars, take a license for the small cars. So I'm very happy about the minister. She was saying that people must be retested when they renew their license, and that we appreciate a lot. Now, thank you very much for now, because I'm under pressure now by Honorable Suvos Ndebele looking at the national legal advice.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I don't know whether I must say good morning or good day. I don't know the time. It's still morning. Good morning, everyone. Okay. I agree with the Honorable next to me when he's saying Honorable Ramakakane was an MEC and Honorable Ushielo knows the job. But I can also confirm that the Honorable was also hands-on on this operation. He knows some of the activities that we are going to talk about here. That's the MEC member next to me. Chairperson, let me start by joining my colleagues in appreciating both the presentations, and also start by congratulating the the first presenter on behalf of RTA and his team by coming up with a strategy to increase payment platforms. Because sometimes you can say an infringer does not want to pay, forgetting that it may be the how much of the payment system. It's good that they are to increase these payment platforms. They have a strategy to do that, making it easy for people to access those payment platforms. And also, I also recommend the issue of coming up with a strategy to have this drug detecting device, because it's also another thing that's causing most of the accidents on the road. There was also a proposal of a workshop by the presenter, which we also appreciate because it will make us understand their mandate better. Let me come to the issue of what was mentioned as contributing factors to road accidents. Lawlessness was mentioned, I think it's by drivers, and also misbehavior by drivers. It's short of mentioning the corrupt activities by officials, because there are corrupt activities on the road there, which also result in high motor accidents. You also mentioned when you were talking about stakeholder engagement, that your strategy would be to extend your stakeholder engagement. You have a program around that. I think it would be wise if you can also target individuals, because other people will say, I'm representing this stakeholder, and that very person does not give feedback to the people back there. Your program should also target individuals, even if it's a radio program or whatever message that you can send there. Under the change of behavior, you are saying you are to reach out to 9 provinces. I think you will be having 1 program per province. I am thinking of those vast provinces like Limpopo, KZN, and the Eastern Cape. I can propose that you go beyond your target so that you can get a performance bonus as an official, to have at least 2 activities per vast program. If you have, let me take the example of the Eastern Cape, if you have a program in Port Elizabeth, you also have a program in Mthatha, because the province is vast. That's the province that I understand, because I'm coming from that province. At least by doing that, you will be sure that you have reached most of the communities. Coming to the next presentation, I had an interest when you were talking about recruiting 1,000 new traffic officers. But I had a question. Was the recruitment fair? Did the notice reach the young people of South Africa? If yes, in your shortlisting, you must consider, or the product must reflect South Africa. Sometimes it is wrong to recruit people who are near at your head office. At least you must be able to tell us that in my recruitment, I have so many young people from Eastern Cape, KZN, whatever province, so that you reflect the demographics. It is also advisable to stick to your advert. If you said you need unemployed young people, you should do away with those who are on job. and target the ones who are unemployed, if your advert was saying so, so that we address the challenge of unemployment. In your program 3, KPI 16, there's an annual target there that I don't understand. You are saying 100% corrupt and fraud complaint investigation. Will it end there? What next? Is there no referral to relevant authorities? Because you can investigate, you can do whatever. What else do you do after that investigation? The 21st century curriculum is welcomed because there are those traffic officers who were recruited long ago, and I cannot say education is never stale or knowledge is never stale, but there needs to be something that is done by yourselves. So this is commendable. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think so. I think most of the questions were asked by the former MEC and our children. So I'll just highlight a few things. One, the issue of the awareness in the provinces. While being vast, if you go down to our quarterly targets, you only said you are going to do that in the first quarter. So what will happen in the second, third, and fourth quarter? Is it the issue of budget, or what is the issue here? And then also, maybe it's because it's the presentation itself. It concentrated more on the MTEC rather than the five-year plan. But I think maybe we're doing it for the presentation. The other one is the strategic partners. I think we need to take some things head on, even if we are going to be unpopular. The first one, SAB Millers should be able to come on board, you know, in terms of road safety and other issues, because the drunk and driving that we are talking about, they are the producers. Surely they can't just stand there and watch statistics or watch programs awareness of drunk and driving. You know, I know Dr. Mzolidi at one stage took a stand in terms of smoking in buildings, and he was relentless in pushing that. Until now, we know that nobody's allowed to drink. It was unpopular then, but I think the health department believed in it, and they were able to achieve that. So I don't think SAB Millers and the Brand House and everybody should just get scot-free. I think they should be able to come on board on the issue. And then the other one, in terms of the number of presentations, I see they are increasing instead of coming down. Because my take is, if you come out with effective public awareness on safety, surely the presentations must go down. I know it's maybe in terms of balancing the budget, but remember at one stage we'd want you to have a zero budget from fines. Then we would have achieved our objectives of safety, road safety. So I see it going down a lot. And then I think other issues were raised on the RTMC. I think the issue of the national norms and standard was also raised. I think we've been saying it. I'm not sure where the real bottlenecks are, because it seems we're just running around it. Because we've said we must have one traffic officer. I know there are labor issues involved, you know, also political issues involved. But I think if we take out the real issue, we'll be able to come out with strategies. How do we deal with it? Rather than just put it here like an issue of norms and standards, it doesn't come out clear. So you will have it for the next 5 years, but not be able to achieve it because it's just not clear. Maybe let's break it down as we go to our annual performance plan so that we see where we go into. The other one, which I think was raised by our children, is the issue of the legislation. I can see you've raised an issue of the legislation. I think the department might want to assist us here to say what are urgent issues that need to be done in order for the entities to perform well. I don't think it's other good to mention here that, you know, from 2009 they've been this and then repeated public awareness, nothing has just been said. I think it's a tuba. I think we need to really come out with the end product. You know, we can't be seen dancing around it. And also, I think they first did the progress in terms of transferring responsibilities to RTMC. I think even last day you presented the same issue. I thought you'll give us a progress report, because sometimes as presenting here, we read this document, you know, and we just said with my colleague here today, but this was presented last day. What I want to see, or what we would like to see in our annual targets and quarterly targets, what is being done to ensure that this is achieved, so that we can see whether it's ourselves as parliamentarians which are not assisting, or is the department not assisting, or RTMC itself or RTA not assisting. Then we can be able to tackle the real problem and solve it. I don't think we have the luxury of still, you know, pushing papers around. You know, people are dying there outside. People are looking at us to say, how do we save this? We really have to do that. The other contentious issue also, which we need to work on it, is this revenue that you must get from the municipalities. I know in most provinces, they budget on traffic fines. And I know paying them over, we'll have a fight over it. But maybe it's a political issue, Chair, which we might want to elevate it, because it will then paralyze you not to be able to work. You know, so we need to... They're used to it. Remember, they used to do it, and taking it back, it will be a problem. The other one is the establishment of councils. The National Road Safety Advisory Council and the Community Road Safety Council. I think we must be worried of forming too many structures, you know, that will have some expectations or that will not be able to manage. I think we have enough institution, public institutions to deal with this issue. What we want or what we lack is the implementation thereof, not necessarily forming another council or forming community awareness or what, because the councils will be, council members will be expected to be paid or to be kept busy, which I don't think we even have that time and energy to do that. So I think we must be worried of putting in other structures down there rather than going deep into the implementation part. The other one I would want to make as a recommendation is that out there, there's a public outcry in terms of school children being involved in an accident. I'm not sure how and when, but maybe we would want to elevate it, you know, as our public awareness program. This one of school children. I'm not sure where you address it, because it's just not right. And then the last one, on the issue of the research, I know that we have noticed that most accidents happen normally at night or when it is raining. And we know these things, and it has been going on. What are we doing, you know, to rectify this? Because all the drivers are tested during the day when there is no rain. But we are expecting them immediately to drive at night and in the rain. And we have been saying this for quite a long time. Let's go down to say, what could be the remedies? There might be dreams, they might be impossible, they might be what? I think our children talked about renewing the license every 5 years. Maybe it might be one of the requirements to say, especially on the public transport operators, you actually have to, or you have to really drive through the rain or night to ensure that that is taken into consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before Honourable Carter, the Deputy Minister indicated earlier on that somewhere she's going to leave. I wanted her to just ask me this.
just say a few things, and then we can recuse her to go to the next engagement.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think some of the questions will be responded to by the CEOs or their representatives that are here. But I think I just want to say something or just remark on some of the questions that they asked, and welcome the remarks and the questions that have been asked by honorable members. I fully agree with Honorable Ramatlakane when he says by right traffic is supposed to be an essential service. It is supposed to be an essential service, but of course you'll understand that we have to follow some legal rules in order for us to reach that and engage our unions and everybody. But it also talks to resources such as the number of traffic officers that you must have, so that we have them 24 hours. So it's something that happens over time, addressing the issue of resources, but of course the legal issues that are involved before you can declare any service as essential. And that's what we want to have in South Africa, taking into account the cost of road accidents and fatalities and the loss and pain that happens when that happens. And we think that is something to want to achieve. So it's one of those objectives that we have in our mind. But of course, like I am indicating, it happens over time. Resources in terms of money, in terms of finances, in terms of equipment, in terms of everything, offices and all that. And the issue of stakeholders or stakeholder partnership. We really have quite a number of them, both in the private sector and public sector. I just want to cite one example. For instance, I think in 2013, schools in the coastal areas closed for Easter on Thursday of the Easter weekend. And in the inland schools, they closed on Monday or Tuesday of that week. And we're able to compare what this did to traffic in both these areas, inland and coastal. You had free flow of traffic in the inland provinces and high traffic in the coastal province because of this. And we engaged the Minister of Basic Education to say, can we make it a norm that for Easter weekend we do not close schools on the eve of the Easter weekend, that is on Thursday. And that this has happened, and probably we saw this just even this year, and I think even last year, schools closed on Tuesday, and that allowed children to travel on Wednesday or even on Tuesday for that matter, so that you can actually reduce the number of vehicles, particularly public transport. And this was as a result of communication and interaction that we had. But we also had engagement even with the Minister of Higher Education and Training to say, if possible, even universities should close earlier, not on Thursday, because this indeed had negative impact in terms of volume and therefore accidents and children being exposed to accidents on Thursdays and Fridays. This is what we have done, and of course we are happy to say we seem to have achieved that. But it talks to our stakeholder engagement and involvement of other departments and so on and so forth. But also it talks to, we have a very close relationship with the truckers, the Freight Association, for instance. We have actually informed them that your trucks sometimes are not roadworthy, but also they're responsible for fatal accidents. Once you have a truck and a car accident, you know the results of that will be fatalities and so on and so forth. So we have such engagement. But we are indeed more than prepared and ready to extend that. We have a partnership with manufacturers, car manufacturers. And that is why yesterday we did not have Yes, okay. But today we have those. Yesterday we had cassette that were not sensitive when you are sitting inside and you are not bottled up, but today it's the engagement that we have and it's the innovation that comes with what we are saying, please bottle up, and they then come up with it. But I think we can improve on that and even do more. We road safety strategy, for instance, we want to believe that before you must have road safety policy. So the policy cannot be the responsibility of the entity, it's the responsibility of the department. And therefore sometimes it will be the alignment between the two that the department has said by this time we're going to have our road safety policy. And then, of course, the entity will say out of that we then are going to have the road safety strategy. And it talks to that alignment. I just want to mention. The 306 billion rand that we are losing in South Africa as a result of accidents, it's a combination of things and factors. It takes into account the fact that when there is an accident, you lose a car, the cost of that car. Somebody gets injured, goes to a hospital, and what is the cost of hospital services, ICU, operations, and so on and so forth. The nurse that looks after that person, after that this person will not go to work, and what is the cost of all that? And if you include all that and make up a package, it goes to, it gives us that amount, which is 306 billion. So it's not like you have money somewhere, 306 billion rand kept somewhere. It will be money that is with the Department of Health, for instance, that the Department of Health will use to future somebody who comes at an OPD and the nurse that does it and so on and so forth. It talks to the person who's not able to go to work and therefore not being productive, and how much would that person have contributed if he was at work. And that is what we talk about probably in the cost of accidents, the economy yet. I think I just wanted to mention this. What do we do after investigation is not in our target. Probably that is informed by measurable targets, because if you include that which is done by somebody else, you have no control over that. It's for somebody to include that, you know. If it must go to court, then the court must include as to how fast is it going to process these cases and so on. But as the Department of Transport, we don't have control over that. And that is why if you set targets that are outside your scope, you don't meet them, and you are punished by the Auditor General and everybody else. And that is why, therefore, our targets are measurable, are within that which is within our scope, that which we can do, that which we are held accountable for, because it's supposed to be done by ourselves. And it doesn't mean that other people or other things should not be done, but it should be outside our scope. And that is why probably it will be like that. But I don't know what else did I want to respond to. I fully agree. People such as your SAD, Millers, and so on and so forth, surely must come to the party. We must extend our stakeholder engagement to them as well. We're talking about alcohol abuse and so on. They are quiet somewhere in the corner. We are paying. Are getting money. I think they too must play some role. I fully agree with the member who is saying that. But maybe just to say that indeed it's Kosazana Dlamini Zuma who came up with a policy that says we shall not smoke in the public buildings or government buildings. It's Kosazana Dlamini Zuma and probably Dr. Aaron Mswaneli. Chairperson, I don't know whether there's another question that needed my response. But I think that's what I will respond. I will just say as a way of responding to some of the questions, and hope that the members will then be able to respond to other questions or specific questions. We are committed. In fact, when it comes to road accidents and the pain, the impact they have on the lives of people, even those that do not die, but whose lives are changed forever because of road accidents. We just can't sleep as the executive, but all of us as South Africans. These things are causing a lot of pain and are responsible for massive loss and unexplained hurt and pain to families and to South Africans. And we're looking for any proposal, any suggestion that can make impact in South Africa. As the registrar was saying, we visited unannounced some of these DLTCs. You just understand the fact that in fact maybe what we are saying is not what is supposed to help us. God is just with us. The manner in which corruption is institutionalized. But it's not something that started today. When I applied for my license in 1994, there was a traffic officer was ready to tell me to buy. And it's just that I was not ready. I was going to apply. I was going to go for training and get it properly. And it's something that has happened over a long time that it is now institutionalized. And it is very true that there are people who do not want even to be promoted because they're making more money as junior traffic officers than if they take promotion. So they want to be out there. The moment you hear a traffic officer crying for promotion, you must just look at that person in terms of age. It will be somebody who's about to retire, and therefore somebody wants to prepare a retirement package. But otherwise, when they're still young, they don't want any promotion because they're making a lot of money through corruption and through fraud. And this, for me, is something that needs all of us to deal with, to go to churches and tell the pastors that tell your people not to buy licenses, not to buy learner licenses, not to pay bribes, to take it, but not to be ready to pay bribe. And it happens so frequently. You see it happening in front of you, and we must talk about it. We must talk as members of parliament. We have every right to stop and go to a traffic officer who is actually taking a bribe. Sometimes to track them, drive your smaller yana car and approach them or whatever, don't indicate. And when they stop you and they give you a ticket, you then see, or they ask for your bribe, you just report them immediately. We can't do that. And it is only when all of us are ready to fight this that we probably are going to succeed. Otherwise, it is entrenched. It is institutionalized.
I just want to say that okay. Yes. With regards to the transfer of power to RTMC, this matter is actually receiving attention. You will know that we already have a board of the RTMC and we have the CEO. We have shareholders that are meeting now, and there is a task team that was established. It is led by MEC Kambela, Kompela, and they are just attending to all these things, and they've set targets for the board and for all of us to say at least by April we must have transferred some of these powers. But of course we will be getting report from themselves. But there is a task team that is attending to this matter. It has set some targets for itself, and we want to hear from them when we meet as the shareholders committee. And that is all that our problem. And thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for leaving now. There is another meeting that I'm attending, the IUDF meeting.
DM, yes. Thank you very much. Some of the issues the head of the delegation will be able to report to yourself and the minister accordingly. Thanks. Honorable Khaled.
Okay, thanks. Deputy Minister is leaving. must associate ourselves with the condolences to the MEC in Mpumalanga. So we must send also our condolences towards his loss. Indeed, it is because of the accident, and which is as Transport Patrol Committee must be able to find ourselves associated with that and, you know, throwing our condolences. Chair, I'm trying to find something, I'm trying to understand something with the Department of Transport. The issue of the bills, the issue of ARTO bills and all other bills that we said today, that, because if I remember correctly, Chair, this was presented last year. What's happening? Who's not doing his job? Because when we engage, Babu Salisa confirmed that they're going to deal with this, and next time when they come to the portfolio committee, they will be dealt with this. I don't know if I'm, because my memory still serves me well. Yeah. Maybe they are half. I don't know. But this matter was dealt with. What happened? Who's not doing his work? Maybe Chair, let's take note of this and follow up with the minister and request a full report. Because it seems like the department is not doing its job and somebody must be on the firing line. Because if we can always be complacent with people, there will be no job that we're doing. And us as legislatures, indeed, we are failing also these parastatals. Because we are not strengthening our arm. If ever they are always going to come and complain to one and same thing, then somebody is not doing his job. Indeed, I'm not happy of that. But I need that this thing must be raised. Probably the department must tell us what's the problem. Why is this thing still not being dealt with at this far? And it was said last time it's supposed to be dealt with long time. The other issue, when you raise issues around the challenges, that indeed is the issue of the recklessness driving and the drunken driving, you know, the fitness of a person to drive, that causes accidents. But I think here you're speaking about the issue of cell phones as one of the major causes of accidents. I don't actually realize I saw a person, you know, driving next to me in a busy lane, busy typing, and I'm hooting, beep, 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 don't do that. This person was like, no, and he continues. The unfortunate part, he hit another car at the back. And I was cool, the traffic officer was just right here, and I stopped. I made her, I said, come, please, give me a ticket. I was telling him he must stop with these cell phones. And this guy was like, ah, brah, but how can you do that? And I said, hey, I'm not your brah. I'm telling you that you must stop this thing what you're doing because you've got a cause accident. It's in the traffic, you don't even see what is this front tire stopping. I mean, you're busy with your phone. You're causing accident, unnecessary. I mean, you're blocking the traffic, what's part of it? I don't know how to do it, that, but it's a very serious issue that we must be able to deal with, because cell phones, I challenge as well. I very serious, especially when we are tweeting and, you know, Facebooking. Another lady was, you know, but doing what selfie in the traffic. I think it was on an entry, ne? It was on the newspaper, entry. Well, doing selfie on the traffic, I mean, really. It's a challenge. How do we look at that? How do we do it? Here in Cape Town, you don't take chances. You do that, they take the cell phone. You must collect it after 2. One friend of ours, a colleague in Parliament, I was telling him that, Chief, here in Cape Town, they will take your phone. He didn't listen to me, and he was caught, unfortunately. They took his cell phone for 2 weeks, and he had to go and pay 300 rand again on top of that to release the phone. So those are the things that I think, how do we deal with that? How do we... But the issue of standardization of these things, I think is very much important. You know, let's standardize everywhere in the country so at least we can be able to find solutions. I can see that you also came up with a plan that you want maybe traffic officers to catch about 3 cars, 3 minibuses. I don't know if this will prevent accidents. It's just like what the Joburg Metro is doing, blocking all of traffic, checking tickets. I mean, really now. And what prevent accidents? Unless the job of the Joburg Metro is to collect tickets, to collect cash, it's nothing about the accidents. Then there's a problem. But if we're really talking about, you know, these accidents, you know very well that when you see blue lights, as one of the members just say, when you see blue lights, you're like, ish, ish, ish. You check yourself quickly. Even those who are on cell phones, once they see a blue light in the mirror, hey, you see them, you know, because that thing, it works with your conscience, works with your mind. And once you know that each and every, you know, 3-4 kilometers, the traffic officer, then there's a problem. You know very well that when you drive to, is it M2 to something, there you drive more than 80 or more than 100, you're going to be followed by a ticket. I've got about 2 of them. Hey, I had to go and pay them. Because I realized later, man, there are cameras. You can see that they tell you there's a camera there. And indeed, there will be a camera. You know, I think those are the things that, you know, so that at least you put a conscious decision to people. RTMC, please, just assist me here. Who's not transferring these responsibilities to you? Are we playing games here? You brought this thing last year, you remember? And Shabisa promised. Hey, Shabisa. Who was in the Kenya that Shabisa got to us? What that Shabisa promised? That they're going to transfer this thing. But you are saying RTMC is not delivering. Who's at fault here? Is it the department? Because these red flags are saying are the responsibility are still lying in the department. How long does it take to transfer these powers? Maybe I'll freeze it up just for 2 seconds. How long does it take to transfer these powers?
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Member. Just briefly, the functions that are remaining with the department are the functions that the provinces and municipalities generate revenue. However, the progress now, as the Deputy Minister indicated, the RTMC plus the shareholders committee plus in the department are in the process of getting the issue into MINMEC. Then MINMEC will then decide, once it's decided, those functions will be contracted together with the RTMC.
You are not answering my question. How long does it take to transfer these powers? 20 years.
Honourable Member, once the process of the MINMEC.
How long does it take to transfer the powers? Tell me, 6 months, 2 months, 10 months?
No, honorable.
Because that's an important factor here. Because if we can't be able to deal with it, I promise you, we'll be failing our duties as members of parliament. When next time they come and report here, they say, this thing is not here, Chairperson. I'm going to press out.
You have already passed it out. Can I plead on behalf of the department? Pro- probably at the end of the session we'll have to take a decision around the matter, so that we're able to say how do we deal with the matter. Because I understood the minister to be saying probably MEC Kopela is dealing with the matter, and therefore we will be able to get progress. So in the end, we'll have to take a decision and maybe give the department and the stakeholders a mandate of how to deal with this matter, if we so agree, Honorable Chair.
All right, Chair.
Honorable, yeah.
Chair, let me go to this other one. KPI 3, you spoke about the issue of the two youth programming to implement it. If you can be able to assist me, what youth program are you talking about? What exactly would it be happening? So at least we get an explicit. Because I don't want just to create a substandard program for youth. We are creating a future of a different kind of youth. We can't create programs that to be that. Let's create job employment for youth. Can't take these bodies and put it just to know. We must create an highly educated kind of a quality program. Because, you know, I was in another municipality, they said, no, it's creating job opportunities. They say young people must go back to Mapep. What is that? You can't send people, young people, you can't choose young persons. Instead of providing them with that money, as you say, the stipend, take them to college and study to get a qualification so they can be able to go and contribute positive into the economy of the country. You know, those are the things that I need to be able to understand. So that at least we are moving forward with development, real quality development of our country. The other issue is in relation to the partnership with your higher institutions. I heard you saying, you know, probably there are still challenges. If you can be able to clarify to say what challenges are they that you're having exactly? But because you can't always say, when we speak about capacity building, you're saying you're having a problem with the institutions. I mean, these institutions get the funding from government. It must be as that, people, you must cooperate or else we are holding your funds so that you cannot be able to operate. So those are the things. Probably other members have just spoken around the issues of these 1,000 traffic officers. But mine was to say, maybe let's not, I'll just recommend, I know that I cannot be able to tell you how to do your job, but I could just recommend that let's not poach all other, you know, all traffic officers. We've got a problem of unemployment. Let's not take an employed person and put it in. No. If a person cannot be satisfied with a small bottle of water that is getting there, when he arrives here at RTMC, that means he's going to be corrupt. Because that means he fails to be corrupt that side, because it's been monitored. He thinks this side is the more corrupt side, free to be corrupt. No. We create new job opportunities for new people so that you can be able to move forward. Chair, lastly, on your KPI 22, you spoke about the reduction of these posts. I just want to get to understand which post are you talking about. Because, you see, the challenge that I have also with the department is that the department is telling us that we are reducing posts, but there is still vacant DDG posts. Which posts are you reducing? The very critical key positions are not being filled, but they're saying reducing posts. What are they choosing? There is no responsibility. That means there will be no implementation of programs, because those people who are supposed to implement those things, they are nowhere to be found. So those are my questions, because it really worries me. So that at least we can be able to check how we move forward. Last one, Chair. Makosi for life.
Some have got load shedding, stage 5 load shedding. thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think we've got two. Oh, yes. Honorable Sibande,
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'd like to join my colleagues, but to hint there and there.
Yeah, Honourable Sibande, I was just looking at my chronology here. If maybe we can take five.
Let me leave.
No. I'm saying if you can take 5 minutes, 5 to 7 minutes, and then let's agree that we leave here at 1 o'clock, so that we are able to prepare ourselves for plenary at. So that we are able to give the department and the SOEs in ample time to respond to some of the issues. I'll give you 5 to 7 minutes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, I'd like to comment to you. Unfortunately, the Deputy Minister is not here. You see, to us, for the sake of the statement only to the issue of the MEC in Mpumalanga, I think it won't be sufficient. But I will suggest that maybe we request a thorough investigation, whether is this a really accident or not, because I feel very strongly that the MEC is part of the whistleblowers, because it's very, very concerned, very vocal about this of issue of road accidents. That's why maybe some similar thing, particularly which had happened. We suspect that there's something fishy. And then passing that, I'll start with the best presentation. You see, Chairperson, there is something worrying me about this picture, the first picture. The presenter indicated that this thing starts from Joburg and the light. Why are the offices of the very same entities there in Joburg? What is their responsibility? Why is there? And also is transported to other, because these accidents are not happening. This thing of which we are talking about, most of these people are going to Zimbabwe. They are starting in Joburg, they are going to Zim, they are going to Limpopo, they are starting from Gauteng, they are going to Mpumalanga, they are going to Lesotho. What do you do? And I will differ with my colleagues when they talk about in terms of the roadblocks. I support the roadblocks in terms of the visibility. It's not about ticket collections only, but it's also about driver's license. Because there are people that are taking chances who are driving without any licenses. And then also other cars which are even illegal. And also the issue of stolen cars. I think there we are covered. You know, Chairperson, there are things which have worried me. And then first of all, you see, I won't be quiet like other people about this presentation. It's okay. But it makes us, for us, maybe consume time when you start to talk about it. There are no numbers. It's just blank papers. And then I pass there. With this person also, somewhere we talk about the, I don't know which page, in terms of performance environment, the theme of the solution, effective public awareness. You see, what is worrying me? I'll put an example. In Telkom, there was an advert. Malom Shobowami. That advert had an impact because it crossed all over from the urban, semi-urban, and also in the rural places. What do you have, I mean, in terms of awareness? How do you bring people from the rural areas on board? Because you are focused, since you are putting your input, you are talking about the municipalities of Joburg only, of Gauteng. You see, something what is worrying me. As long our system doesn't talk to each other to both presentations, as long our system, Mr. Mlauzi spoke about the uniform, it's not the uniform only. It's the systems. Our systems are not talking to each other. I'll put an example. Somehow I received an SMS that I'm owing a certain ticket. I drove from home to that particular area, is nearly 200 and something. Coming back is 400 and something kilometers. And I requested that, give me a printout of all what is happening there. They tried. But after paying, I still received the same information. And that is demoralizing even the people who are prepared to do 1, 2, 3. And also, if you can go here in the traffic department and request them to check that if you wanted to pay whatever, systems from other provinces, they don't link with other provinces. What about the department, the entity itself around its own perimeters? And then also, you see, in one of your strategic goals, you see what there is, you said about road safety ambassadors. You see, Shepherdson, as the colleague said, already alluded earlier on about the issue of students or kids, whatever. I'll put an example. That is a good idea, but it will be done when. I'll put an example. If you go to Japan, in Japan, that's why they are excelling with everything, because they take this thing to schools, to kids in an earlier stage. The way the more they grow up, the way they play with it. That's why they are having a lot of expertise in all levels, because they are practically doing it. But here, there's nothing. They're doing nothing. And I will recommend that if this thing can be, I mean, some of this thing can be taken to school as some of the syllabus. And then also, what is worrying me, I mean, the first presentation, there is an, as I indicated, that it's very difficult because there are no pages. It's better anyway. Artoco Center. Yeah, that one, center. I mean, if the center fails to hold, forget, there's nothing. And I want you to find out from them. Because some of the things are happening in different municipalities. How do they accept the issue of housing? How do you often link with other municipalities in other provinces? And also, the other one, which is my concern. I don't know, like, Mama, Michelle and Usbu spoke about the issue of the same thing. In issue of cut and paste, I said, in my daughter, I'll put an example. You said the lack of LCR functionality, lack of correct addresses, details, and you know all these things, and lack of update of document delivery. But see, with this one, we spoke about it. I don't know which year ago. But, I mean, it's like even when you take things and take them to the post office, that process itself is very long. And how much do you spend instead of doing this thing by yourself? Because to me, it's like a duplication of the work. And then I'll come to the second presentation. With the second presentation, on slide, at least this one is professional. Because with them, we were able to link very quickly to some of the things which were there placed. On page capacity building, on page 17, here you raise the point about the qualification. In fact, when we say the driving school instructor qualification, you see, that was the sector which you usually undermine, because as long as you are not interacting with some of these driving schools, forget. As long you don't monitor properly, because here our concern is monitoring and evaluation. As long you don't do proper monitoring, I'll repeat again, in these driving schools, that's where is the problem. Because, excuse me, these are the ones who are giving licenses to the people. Illegally so sometimes. But if you start with them in terms of proper instruction, I think that also it can minimize some of the accidents which are appearing. Somewhere, somehow, I've forgotten a person between the two presenters where this there was this thing of I think it's the first one, reprimanding permits, what is it? You spoke about demerit points, whatever. I don't know. How are you going to treat the issue of in terms of the cross-border neighboring countries? Because that one is the same picture which you saw, are the ones who are giving goods like that. So what system do you have in terms of reprimanding them or taking them on board? Because as a country, we still have a responsibility in terms of integration, what is regional integration and like. And truly speaking, we are the country which is more advanced than other countries. And you talk about this, I mean, with this one, again, it's linking with this one. They don't have, they can give you wrong address, wrong whatever, doing, driving, whatever, done everything, which is very illegal. And then also go to slide number, number 19. Number 19 is the same question is when we talk about capacity building, upskilling. When we talk about the partnership, yes, my colleague has alluded to it many ways with the partnership, but how, again, it goes back, how often do you link with local government? Because that's where they play. I mean, my colleague, they also made an example of the uniforms that this local government is in this uniform and the like. And how often do you interact with them? And how often do you interact with through certain funds? I'll come with you with it to show you an example that how is it. On slide number 21, you see, there is a point which you have raised which is very positive. You said about the appoint accident information officer at all police stations. You see, Chairperson, where does it help us? Some of the cases of the road accident files are not complete because of this, whereby some of the people, they are unable to take correct statements in terms of the cases. I'll put an example. They have already started by appointing people to be there in most of the hospitals, but there are problems. Either the statement is not correct from the police, or else there are forms which have disappeared. I visited one of the areas in Mpumalanga whereby documents were nowhere to be found. And the patient was transferred from a certain hospital to a certain hospital. I think if you can correct that one, it can be correct. But by when? Because you said you're going to appoint them. By when? Because I'm scared that next year we'll be talking about the very same thing. And I'm a little bit disturbed. I'll tell you outside Jefferson why. Because I wanted maybe to, for us, to some of the things which can assist us. On slide number 23, when you talk about the issue of King, this thing of 23, people are drunk, you know? But there is this thing which we have already alluded to, the issue of the drug, people who are drug users. Because practically, from our own townships, most of these like the kids who are speeding cars, they're using trucks. At the end, they are involved in accident. I think if you can speed up, whether it's a law, whatever, help us to get that thing as soon as possible so that it can be practicalized to minimize accidents. Because that is part of the problem, whereby people that are imbibed with any intoxication at any time while they are driving. And then I think the last one is slide number 36. On slide number 36, which is worrying me, again, the issues have started in terms of the vacancies, the red one. You see, as I indicated, the executive legal and compliance services, we talk about monitoring, evaluation and monitoring, and it is vacancy. At the end, that's where we're struggling about the issue of accounting in terms of responsibility. It's worrying me. I'm worried about this vacancy because it's very sensitive. How long is it like this? Because last time we were arguing about a lot of vacancies. This one in particular, is not an ordinary vacancy. It's for somebody who's supposed to take responsibility of something. How are you going to monitor and evaluate at the same time while you didn't employ a particular person? Or you use an acting person. At the end, when we request you to come and account, it's very difficult. That person is nowhere to be found. I'll put my case there.
Thank you, Honorable Sibande. Quick one from me to the two board members
advocate and Mr. Martinez. I think both of your presentations spoke to issues of research. If we can be appraised as a committee of the research that has been done, so that we are able to know if that research is assisting both entities, because it can be a research which actually just does, but I think it's also very important that I'm not sure what kind of research, but I'm just saying off the cuff, probably it will be very important that we also look into. We know there are fatalities, we know that people are already, most of them is attributable to alcohol abuse and other related things. And what else can we be able to say? These are the issues. I assume that that research will be able to tell us if that is that kind of a research. Can we look into its human factor, but we also need to look into the infrastructure, look into other things which actually are contributing to the trauma that we are seeing. And I think the other thing that I believe we should be able to be very articulate, I had it a bit from RTMC, issues of the National Development Plan. They have been said, but they are very subtle in terms of how they have been put forward. You know, this is the 30-year plan, and this is the beginning of how the National Development Plan is being put forward. It will be very exciting how we're able to really flesh them out so that people are able to know. The issues of safety are very, very, in almost, when you go to health, you get issues of safety, you go to police and everywhere, you get issues of safety, and I think these are the things, because you are regulating issues of safety and security, they should be really in the limelight. Lastly, to the department, you know, the strategic plan when it comes to RTMC is just one paragraph, which you expect the entity to really deal with the matters. The paragraph says harmonized law enforcement strategies and systematic law enforcement across the three tiers of government. I don't have an issue with that as a department, but I think you can be able to, in future, add some other things which actually comes from the National Development Plan, which actually will be able to add an emphasis and an oomph to what RTMC is doing. And also, there are other legislations that they are using if they have to deal with the issues of the three tiers of government. There are legislations that they are using. For sure, you can be able to piggyback out of that. In essence, what I'm trying to say is that you have been too, I'm lacking a better word, English, but in terms of how you can be able to utilize this organization, for which you can be able to give more in terms and do more in terms of what is expected. So look at your strategic plan and say, and what else can we be able to do? Actually, both for Artia, Artia, they've got 4 bullets, which actually I don't have issues with, but you can be able to look into. Start improving your strategic plan in terms of the SOEs, because you're just expecting that they must have a strategic plan, which is derived from your strategic plan, but if you've got just one paragraph, what are you expecting out of them to do? So to me, those are the issues that I wanted to do. Through you, advocate, and then say, Martinisa, I'm going to throw it back to yourself. We will be mindful of the fact that members must go to plenary. The president will today be responding to some of the questions. For sure, it will be nice for you to come and see live the soap in Parliament. It's a live soap at once.
Thank you, Madam Chair, esteemed members and colleagues. In the interest of time, My colleague and I have conferred and we propose to deal with the comments in the following manner. Firstly, to the extent that there were specific questions that were raised, we offer, subject to your approval, that we respond to those in writing. And secondly, we will not, and I don't think it will be appropriate for us to debate recommendations and observations. Ours is to learn in that spirit, go back and improve where we should improve. In fact, we have presented to you what is the benefit of previous comments from the shareholders and other stakeholders. And I think in the same spirit, we don't have to be arrogant and appear defensive. Let's take note of that which needs to be improved. So to the extent that we might not be dealing with issues in detail, we should not be seen as getting the issues. But I think we can't do justice to over 37 questions that were put in 10 minutes. That is the proposal that you put in. So we will try to provide clarity-seeking responses, and if it suits you, Madam Chair, we will then respond in writing to those other specifics. But let me start by saying I think the observations are spot on. The criticism with regard to paucity and immeasurability is well taken, and we will seek to improve on that. Let me just provide the following information, which I believe is critical to the rest of the House. One, with regard to TASIMA, this has been a monkey on our backs for some time. But I can inform the House that we have just come back, in fact, this morning, from what is called a case management program with the judge president, wherein this matter will be finally argued in the Pretoria High Court on the 28th and the 29th, mindful of the fact that come the 30th of April, that contract comes to an end, regardless of what TASIMA has to say. Either we're right or they're wrong. But no more needs to be said on that because it is finally going to be arbitrated before the courts. It is not as if the department is withholding the function. The function belongs to us legally, but it was withdrawn for a number of technical challenges that you are aware of. There was no RTMC that had the capacity to undertake it. Now, needless to say, those who must give unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar are saying no. Post the end of April, they must still participate in preparing what is called a transfer management plan, which by implication, it would force you to a default extension, which is what has been happening over the past 5 years. So if taking a view that enough is enough, let's go to court. If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you're right, you're right. End of the story. That is where that TASIMA matter is. Now, the RTMC, ourselves in particular, the new ladies on the block, were reluctant to accept the function when, firstly, we did not even have the capacity ourselves to deal with the issues that the House is bringing to our attention. So it would be foolhardy to do that. However, we are in a state of readiness to take this function over if the courts were to give us a green light. And that is why we've advertised to demonstrate our capacity to take the function over. We must accept, colleagues, that the reality is that we will not get a judgment 2 days after this matter that has been running for 7 years. But what we have tried to negotiate with the court is to give us a ruling that says, yes, you're right or wrong, so that come the 1st of May, there is no uncertainty. But you must accept that if you are used to getting 44 million a month, you are not going to let go that easily. So we must expect that there will be appeals. May I request that I leave that issue at that because it is at a critical stage. With regard to the transfer of other rights, I'm saying this because members have raised it, and I want to be fair to the department here to say the only functions that have been given to us were dependent on our organogram. Now, the shareholder said, and rightly so, demonstrate to us that you are going to fill these critical positions. Give us a strategic document that will be subjected to these processes. And once that has happened, we'll give you the functions that you are able to perform. Otherwise, it talks to one that Ramatlaka must say, giving yourself non-smart targets, then you have measurability programs. You will see when we last appeared before you, you did not have this executive team before you. And I deliberately requested them through your leave to say, come, let's show force that we now have an executive. The one compliance position is a critical position. It is in the process of being filled. Interviews have happened, but you're not going to get any from Dick and Harry. You have to be satisfied that that is the right person for the job. Once we have filled in that layer of executives, we go back to the shareholder committee and say, we now have these executives in place, give us additional powers. That is how it is going to happen. So I do not think it is fair to intimate that the department is dragging its feet. It is a bilateral arrangement. We have completed a shareholder contract with the minister, wherein we said, you two must come to the party as our principal, but this is what we also require. So I have no reason to suggest that that process is not happening as requested. At the level of a comment that was made by Dr. Matiki, he said, these taxis and public transport cause problems. You don't usually have a MEC colliding with a MEC. Our research, which is what you suggested the last time around, to say, don't just give us a strategy that is not research-informed and research-driven. We capacitated that shortcoming, and we sought to not only get stats, but analyze and understand the trends and the patterns. That particular misconception is commonplace, and it is wrong. Statistically and research-based, vetted by all the 9 agencies, provinces and other stakeholder agencies, actually those MECs account for 57.3%. The minibuses, the midibus, and the commercial vehicles put together do not even exceed 15%. The taxis account for the least number of fatalities. But when people talk, you see, say, these taxi drivers are loan to themselves, they kill people, but research-based statistics tell you to the contrary. That is a result of the criticism that we received here. Another important point that members must take away with, we also picked up that there are two types of patterns. When people travel in December, most of the accidents happen at night. We then focused our strategy on that, and we blocked all the major roads. But research proved to us that we were wrong, and we must accept it humble pie. We concentrated on the main roads, and the research showed us that most of the fatalities happen in the inbuilt areas. We tried to adapt. But the tendencies now with regard to the Easter tells us differently. People who travel on pilgrimage and all of those things do not die at night. It is during the day. Because they wake up early, try to travel so that by 12 o'clock they're at their destinations. And at that critical moment, fatigue kicks in. And the pattern is also different. Now, having said that, we also have to analyze that who are these people who are dying on the roads, whether we like it or not, it's black people. Now, it is a phenomenon that we must engage with, again, on a research-based basis, empirical data, as opposed to be emotional about it. But having said that, I think we are at a point where we now know where we are going. We have an organization that in 18 months' time previously was in ICU, non-existent. But now we are beginning to grapple with these uncomfortable issues, and we now know where the problems are. We have a research institute that we are creating. We are collaborating with other agencies. RK and ourselves traveled to Australia last year. We have prepared a report which we gave to the minister so that specific questions that some of you are raising here are dealt with, and we are making proposals. Engineering is one of the factors that we have identified to say some of these roads are also not built for the capacities that we have, and they too contribute, but we have to back it up with empirical evidence. I leave that at that. Legislative review. To be fair to the department, it is not as if they are dragging their feet. What has happened is that we advised, which advice was accepted, to say let's go for low-hanging fruits. There are certain legislative amendments that you can push through quickly. And that require your engagement because you are the lawmakers. But let's not make legislative challenges an issue. Let's find creative ways of doing more with the little resources that we have. 1,000 recruits, those are your national traffic police who are not going to be based in Pretoria, but who are going to be distributed evenly across the 9 provinces, each on a prorated basis. But you've got to undertake a study. Why are they taking 2 years? Yes, we are looking on the outer end of Dramatlakane precisely because we don't want to bulldoze the same people who are not properly trained. That's why we gave ourselves a 2-year window so that we career path them. But constitutionally, we also can say those who are having a small bottle of water must also not be kept in the loop. There are challenges there, but the point is we must be sensible and lean towards those who are unemployed completely. But you're not going to bring people into the system only to compound the problem. They've got to be properly trained. And these issues are real issues, hard issues. Corruption. 2-3 days ago, we were part of an operation that arrested 6 people in the R who appeared in court. But because of the covert nature of some of these operations, we are hard-pressed to give you detail. Safe to say that we have to start arresting people and taking them through the programs. It will be silly for us to tell you what would happen post the investigation because another sphere of government kicks in and you as legislators would know better about the principles of separation of powers. But having said that, in total, the specific issues that have been raised are well taken, and we will respond to those in writing, and if members still feel that there is a need for further engagement on our responses, by all means, we would do that. I made a note of 37 comments, and I'm not sure if we'll be able to go through them, but I think the cooperation, Madam Chair, is there. Members of the shareholder committee are also coming to the party. You remember that last time we lamented the fact that the very same shareholders themselves were not doing their job, and I say this with respect. Because if you look at the powers and the functions of the RTMC and how it operates, it's a very unique situation. You have a board, you have the shareholder committee, which is the 9 MECs, who themselves don't always agree, and then you have the minister. And if the shareholder committee does not meet and you don't have delegations, it means that particular organization becomes paralyzed. And we become unfair when we blame those who are tasked with managing it on a day-to-day basis because they will then go on autopilot because they are not under review. Acknowledging that challenge, we proposed and the minister accepted to say, because it's difficult to reconcile the areas of 9 MECs, form a smaller and a task team that will serve as a buffer in between big meetings so that we can expedite the speed with which certain critical decisions are taken. That was done. There is not a single meeting that they missed because the task team comprises 3 MECs. And it's easy to round robin 3 MECs and get decisions going. And I think with that type of assistance and the fact that, as you can see, we only subject ourselves to your authority. We come here to engage. That also assists us because when we come here, we don't come here scared, shaking in our boots, thinking, what have we done wrong? We come here to say, this is what we think, you input, you go back, improve, you come back. At the end of the day, we all have a common objective. As a last and cutting shot, Madam Chair, take comfort in knowing that a lot of the issues of interrelation will be resolved depending on which way the Dasima issue goes. INATIS is the answer to province, municipality talking together. You've got a platform that is not being utilized to the fullest extent. That is why our statistics are messed up. They don't have integrity. Everybody does as they please, just on the traffic registration side. Now, once that issue is resolved in our favor, hopefully, we would then be able to link up all of these 3 spheres of government on the critical information that we should be getting so that when we speak about these frustrations, we do so from an informed and empirical evidence point of view. But colleagues must also understand that linked to that was the issue of your driving licenses, which was under the auspices of ProDiva. It's an open secret that they held on to it until it was resolved in the Supreme Court of Appeals 3 weeks ago, where the courts ruled that you can't perpetuate that contract, which was entered into illegally. So that issue has been resolved. We will have better control over the driving licenses and the issuance thereof. The biggest fight here, which cuts across all the things that members have said, is the issue of the platform, the INATIS. Because INATIS talks to ability to track fines, to track all these other traffic law offenders. It is sitting with a service provider that you yourself have extended a contract since 2007. And they are saying, we need another 2 years to transfer it officially to you. The budget is 600 that you've approved. We need 1.5. The balance of that actually emanates from, if that function is to be transferred, you need to absorb 223 people. into our system to then develop this function. If it happens, it's good. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But what we have said is of equal application to what RTA finds itself in. But I don't have what to speak for RTA. I suggest that as RTMC, we leave it at that, complement it with written responses, and maybe leave RTA an opportunity to supplement if they so feel the need. But in our response, it will be a joint response, because some of the questions, you can't really separate them. We are one agency or sister agencies belonging to one Department of Transport. Madam Chair, I thank you and colleagues. Trust us when you say that the observations are well taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and the honorable members. We have taken the observations and the concerns quite seriously, and I am confident to say that within the RTA environment, our sleeves are up to ensure that we roll out the RTA bill effectively and appropriately. And in terms of the number of questions that have been raised, like Mr. Majave said, we'll respond to those in writing. And I concur with him because of the time factor. And just one point in terms of our business. Our business hinges on the promulgation of the bill. I'm sure you might have seen the emphasis in the presentation. And we cannot realize our mandate without having that bill passed into the parliamentary processes. And that's critical. We have raised it with the Department of Transport. We have sympathized them, and we are hoping. We had a special meeting even with the Deputy Minister, so the ball is rolling. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We were supposed to have a workshop sometime earlier in the year, but was since postponed. I think we'll reschedule it before we go to the next recess, so that at least we are also put on the loop as to what exactly is happening. Honourable members, I'm going to recuse the department. I think earlier on we said that some of the things we can take a decision here, but from what the advocate was saying, I think it's very clear as to the cat is or the horse is bolting towards which end. It is.
Sorry, Chairperson.
I thought. Okay. Who's that?
Chair, just one on process. In terms of the written responses, what is the time frame?
Can we give them 48 hours? So that next week when we come to the committee, the questions have been responded to.
Chair?
If we can get the responses by next week Tuesday, that will be, I'm saying 48 working hours, I guess. 48 working hours is today, tomorrow, and Monday. It will be 48, that's in essence what I'm saying. I wanted to recuse the department so that maybe we can be able to do a bit of in-house before we leave. Sure. Thank you very much, Advocate. Thank you very much, Mr. thank you very much, Acting CEO. Thank you very much, CEO. Thank you to the DDG. See you again next week, department. Thank you.